Choose your next words carefully, Leonidas. They may be your last.
Madman. You're a madman. Blasphemy. This is madness.
This is Sparta!
Who do we have left? Britney Spears? Cam Kardashian? Paris Hilton? Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global.
I mean, the lines are blowing up.
Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E.
Oh, look at you!
All right, everybody, I'll be right with you. I'm a good guy. If you attack us, I attack you. Hello, my name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. My name is powerful. This is a no-win situation. I'll give you a call in about an hour and a half. I survived it, and I'm at the end of it.
Oppressors of generations who have kept you down with myths of opportunity, and we give it back to you, the people.
Brother, it is time for the mortals to pay.
Release the Kraken!
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, the 23rd of October. It's about 63 degrees in California. Cool, overcast, might rain. Traffic is light. If you're from New York, it only takes you 5 days if you take the 101. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Brian Hammer Jackson. We are global. You know, back in the day, technology was so fast. Things were moving so fast. And I used to say, when you went to sleep, the world was different when you woke up. Man, we're in some heavy shit. Some big, heavy shit, man. You know, we were talking about it the other day with some friends of mine. We were getting together, had a couple of drinks. And we're, some of my friends were asking, they were, you know, 24, 25. They were saying, you think we're going to war? And I say, yeah. I mean, all you have to do is look at it. We got a former rogue president who loves the other side. He's a traitor to the United States of America. Some say he might win. All he thinks is to make a deal and the world be okay. We have the Israelis who want to obliterate, just destroy Hamas. But the problem of it is that if you go into Palestine and looking for Hamas, you don't know what they look like, who they are. They don't have any uniforms or any identifying characteristics unless they're holding a bazooka. So what are you doing? You're trying to wipe out the Palestinian people. And then the Palestinian people are saying, what did we do? And we shut off your water, electric, food. And then you got the other, you got Iran, and you got other people who are saying, what the fuck? Is this humane? Is it inhumane? Palestinian people are saying this is like trying to wipe us out. And this happened to you, Israel, these guys, these Jewish people before. It was another guy who tried to wipe you all out. Yeah. The Americans are getting in there. It's not going to work. That's how we got into Vietnam. And I don't know if we want to put troops on the ground in the Middle East again. And then we don't have a Speaker of the House because the Republicans can't get their shit together. They look like clowns. Happy Monday, everybody. You know, there is a fallout. I don't know what site you're on. It was horrific. Very horrific what Hamas did. Beheading babies. Yeah. Shooting babies. Yeah. Raping and all this kind of stuff. It's horrific what they did. They must pay. The problem of it is how do you identify who it is? Do we punish the whole people? And that goes back to the fallout that it's having now. This reminds me of the height of Black Lives Matters. And in which way is that you don't speak about Black Lives Matters? It's like Fight Club. Don't speak about Fight Club. And if you're in a, find yourself in a coffee shop or somewhere talking about this, you can't win. Even if you're in a Jewish neighborhood, you can't win. You can't win. It's like a situation I was in yesterday. And the situation was easy. You know, you wonder, you try to do a right thing, but it turns out to be a wrong thing. This has nothing to do with the war. It's just that no matter what you do, it's kind of, you can't win. Now, what happened to me yesterday is I was going to get some chicken. This has nothing to do with war. Well, it could have. And they have very little spaces, okay? I saw one open space. I'm going to park there. But I couldn't because the homeless man was sitting in the other space that was occupied with a car, but his cart was askew, meaning the cart was on his side, but it was barely touching the side that I wanted to park in. So it was time to make a corporate decision, which I did. I thought if I inch my truck in, tap the cart, I can get a parking space. Just tap, 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 tap. Nothing big. It's had nothing to do with the war, but has something to do with whatever you do, you can't win. So I inched in. Meanwhile, this guy's talking to himself, drooling. He's in his own head. Who knows what drugs he's on. It's one of those guys. He might have got some bad drugs. He's just talking to himself, doing whatever he wants to do. So I inched the cart. Cart fell over. Well, that's all she wrote. Now he put his little crazy talk on me, yelling and screaming and everything. I said, okay, let's see if I can find another space. Luckily, somebody else pulled out. Maybe a couple people got scared and they decided to move. He was that loud. Park somewhere else. That's what happened. So I told a group of people, and they all disagreed. One woman said, well, a mistake happened. And like all mistake, you made a mistake. You didn't do it on purpose. I would apologize to the homeless man and pick up his help him pick up his belongings. She said. People agreed. Some people agreed. Sounds nice, right? Sounds like the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. But let's go over it again. This guy, before I even did anything, was yelling and screaming, talking to himself, being in his own little homeless world. Already, before I even did anything. His car falls over. He's pissed and he's screaming. Okay? I decided not to have a confrontation with a crazy man who was homeless and probably on some kind of drugs. I exited, went somewhere else. Now, if I was to apologize to this man, who was completely out of his mind, he could be on any kind of drugs you want to, hallucinogenic, whatever. And homeless people don't get the best drugs. You know they get the crappy drugs. They get the crappy. They probably got a lot of fentanyl with sprinkled with some drugs in it. They're probably sniffing baby powder. Who the fuck knows? They're drinking rubbing alcohol just to get a buzz. You're dealing with this. So you don't expect this guy to be reasonable or logical. It's like, hey, man, I'm sorry. Hey, dude, I understand. All right, help me pick up my shit. Yeah, I'll help you pick up your shit. Okay, no, that's not going to happen. Then let's go to part B, because I'm such a bad person. Part B, the woman said, you know, help the guy get his stuff in the car. All right, here's the problem with part B. I don't know what's in this man's cart. I don't know if there's needles. I don't know if there's drug paraphernalia. I don't know what's in there. I don't know if dysentery. I don't know. I don't have a test in the shop. Even cops have to put on gloves if they're going to talk to these people. So I'm going to use my bare hands, reach into this man's cart or pick up his stuff and put it in his cart. I don't know if he's doing cocaine and is laced with fentanyl and I get fentanyl on my hands. I'm not kidding. I don't know. I don't know what's in that cart, what could stick me, what could hurt me, what I could bring home. No. Again, it was a nudge. It wasn't on purpose, and I go, eat, and didn't work. Ease my way out. Get the fuck out. Because you're not going to have a – have you ever had a confrontation with a homeless person or somebody who wasn't there? Or even your friends. You know when your friends are all drunk? If you try to talk logic to these guys, it doesn't work. And then he's thinking you messed up his home because his home's in a cart. He's going to be furious about that. Logic is not going to work. Nobody's there to calm down the situation, get the fuck out, which I did. There you go. So the person says, well, it depends on your character and what you did next, and you should apologize. My character is fine. My character is fine. I did what I had to do. I got my chicken and got the fuck out. It was not a win-win situation. A confrontation could have led to the police, and the police could have came back, and they could have arrested me or whatever. No. Remove yourself from the situation. Get the fuck out. That's the rule. That's almost going back. What you're saying with what this has to do with the Israel thing, you can't win. You got to get the fuck out. What Hamas did was horrific. I wish they can catch the people who did it and blow their fucking brains out. Catch the people who did it and blow their fucking brains out. One by one. I wouldn't even do it that fast. Cut off an ear, toe, or a pinky toe. You cut off their pinky toe, they can't walk. Each one of them, you catch the ones who did it and you cut off their pinky toe. They'll be falling down all over the place. They won't be able to walk. Cut off their big toe. Just make them suffer. Then blow their goddamn brains out. That's how I feel. And I think 99.9 people feel the same. They feel the same. They feel the same. But here we go. Now we see bombs on the other side in Palestine and people starving and hitting a hospital. And it doesn't matter if Israel said no. It doesn't matter if the U.S. said no. It doesn't. It was from, and I happen to believe it was the Hamas bomb. I happen to believe that. But you're going to get the side that will say no. It's like Trump supporters. No, if it's from the other side, why would we blow up our own hospital? You're going to get that. I can't help thinking that there's some fuck out there saying, you know, if we do this, we can start World War III, which we want to start. I've been watching too many Jack Ryan movies, you know. There's just some lone wolf out there, some lone little sec out there, thinking, let's fuck this shit up, and it will be a war. I cannot help thinking that. But then again, I don't agree with Israel saying that we're going to find them, we're going to wipe them off the parts of the earth, and the talk is like genocide. I don't agree. They must be punished, yes, but how do you punish them? So now we have this conflict. But if you talk about Israel, if you're American. Now, the thing about it is now we got hate crimes going on. We have, what was it, 2 weeks ago, a landlord, that little fuck, stabbed that baby many times and stabbed the mother because they were Palestinians. We got synagogues being damaged and some Jewish people, I think, died too. I think it's just recently. This is something else, so what do you do? Well, then you go to late night and you have some fun, right? You need to laugh. The world's a shithole. Everything's a clusterfuck. You try to get away with it, but you can't. It's all around us. So you turn to late night. Here we go, title of the show. If you criticize Israel, your show may be canceled. And that's what happened with Jon Stewart. People walked out on Dave Chappelle. It's what happens when you get the conversation, even me talking about this, and I'm trying to talk about it as neutral as I can. So we go to, we need to get an expert opinion from a real retarded idiot, a traitor of the United States of America. Here's Donald Trump talking about, it's supposed to be talking about Israel. You know, I don't know what happens to this fool. You're supposed to be talking about Israel. That's what the title says. The title says, unbelievable what Trump told Garzans. Now, you know, I hate these fake news people. They get the little thing, and all of a sudden you get a regular guy talking about this bullshit, and he tends to be a news captain for the spins on it. I got a feeling that's what it is, but I'm hoping I hear Donald Trump. So here you go. Here's Donald Trump talking about, I hope, I didn't look at it, or I didn't proofread it or proofhear it before I told you, but let's see what happens here. This is not going well already. Here we go. Donald Trump talking. This was, is this 2020 United Elections? Wait a minute. Donald Trump on Israel versus Palestine Live is supposed to be, when was this? 5 days ago. Supposed to stream 5 days ago. So let's see. How you think I talk about shit? He's not going to talk about it. He's going to try to do a stand-up. Here's your former president, your champion of the Republican Party, the retardo and former president, the retard. Here's what he's saying.
Many of them armor-plated, you know, costing $1 million a piece. Armor-plated, 4 inches of steel. And you say, why did you leave it? We weren't leaving it. I said even take out the leather hangers, you know, to make it actually of leather. You think of plastic, but with the government, they sort of get leather instead because, you know, they always go the most expensive route. But the hangers, they said, I want every nut, I want every bolt, I want every screw that's laying on the ground, I want everything to go out. And one of them said to me, Millie, he said, sure, it would be cheaper if we left everything. I said, where does it come from? A brand new airplane cost $128 million, right? I said, you mean you think it's cheaper to leave it than to fill it up with a little fuel, and fly it the hell out. Even if you just fly it to Pakistan, then you bring it back home, or you fly it back home. Most of them can make that journey, right? Oh, it's better to leave it there. I don't want to tell you what I had to go through with these people. some of the dumbest people I've ever met in my life. But we have. But you know what? But our military is great. We had some of the most incredible. Don't forget, we defeated ISIS in 4 weeks, less. I was told it would take, it takes 4 years, sir, maybe three, 4 years. What, 4 years? And I went over to Iraq, and I met with people and generals and sergeants. I met with everybody, and I said, what do you think? So we could do it in less than 4 weeks. And I said, they tell me 4 years. We can do it in less than 4 years. The one general, he was fantastic. He said to me, sir, I'm just telling you, 4 weeks and we have time left over. And I said, well, I'm not getting the same stuff. Why is it that didn't work? Well, what they do is, I call them the television generals. They'd come over and they'd tell these guys what to do, and they'd do it. I said, but don't you say that you're not supposed to do that? I mean, we can do it much better. Sir, that's not our position. When the high rankers, they call them high rankers, come over from Washington, we do what they tell us to do. I said, so why is it so bad? Well, they want to use the one base that's very far away, and they didn't want to be, politically incorrect. So they didn't want to use other bases that they had all over the place. And he said, sir, we can use those bases, and we'll hit them from the left, we'll hit them from the right, we'll hit them from the bottom, we'll hit them from the top. They won't know what the hell happened, sir. And that's what happened. And I got it knocked off. And the longer version of the story, which is a cool story, but I won't bore you with it. I can only tell you this, that our military is amazing. It's amazing. We have a great military. And it's not going woke. We're not going to have our military be woke, fellas. Okay?
All right. I can't take this babbling idiot anymore. As you can tell, this is what this guy would do. One, he's saying our generals and our military is the dumbest thing in the world. And on the other hand, he's going, I love our military. I can't take this guy. But he did get sanctioned. And I think this guy really wants to go to jail. He even said it. I'd rather go to jail. I think he's supposed to, he thinks that maybe if he goes to jail, he becomes a martyr, the world goes crazy. Well, he had a gag order on his ass. It was a really light gag order. It wasn't really a hard gag order. Was it? But, so he broke it. Here you go. So this is the guy who's running for president of the United States, supposed to abide by the law. And basically he said, fuck you guys. I'll say what I want to do, and I'll do what I want to do. This is your champion. This is your idiot that you put in the fight. Here's what happens when he had a gag order issued to him.
Who has some new reporting on former President Donald Trump, who just suffered a big blow in court. Paula, what happened?
Well, Dana, just moments ago, a federal judge ruled that former President Trump will be subject to additional restrictions ahead of his federal trial here in Washington, D.C., related to his alleged role in efforts to subvert the 2020 election and January 6th. Now, like many defendants, he already has some restrictions on what he can and cannot say as a criminal defendant. He is already barred from harassing or threatening witnesses, and he has limitations on the extent to which he can discuss the case with anyone who is not one of his attorneys. But in recent weeks, special counsel prosecutors argued that there should be more restrictions on him in light of public statements that he has made about witnesses, about staff members, and here, the judge had a really difficult task, Dana. I was in court as she listened to arguments from his defense attorneys and from prosecutors about this need to balance his First Amendment rights, the fact that he is a candidate for office, but also the fact that this court needs to be able to conduct this trial without interference. They need to select a jury that is not afraid that it is going to be threatened or intimidated. They also need people to be able to do their job as witnesses. And it was really interesting to watch this back and forth. The hearing lasted for over 2 hours. Then Judge Tanya Chutkan, she's the judge who will oversee this through what is expected to be a trial, she left the bench for a short time and came back. And she ruled that she was going to add additional restrictions on Trump. He is now barred from targeting members of the special counsel, staff, members of the court staff, and also any witnesses. Now, the government had asked her to go a little bit further, asked her to restrict any comments he made would make about Washington, D.C., or the jury pool, and also some of his comments about the Justice Department and the Biden administration. Judge didn't go quite that far, but she has expanded the restrictions, and she said, look, if he violates this, there will be sanctions, but it's unclear exactly what will happen. Now, we're still waiting for the formal order to lay out all of these details, but she just ruled from the bench, and I would describe this as a partial win for prosecutors who wanted to see these additional restrictions. And, Dana, look, Judge Chutkan, she has made clear that she understands that former President Trump has a First Amendment right, but that must yield to the orderly administration of justice in this courthouse.
Paula, thank you so much for reporting that breaking news. I appreciate it. Jeff Zeleny is still here. I now want to bring in Evan Perez to the conversation for your reporting as well. Before you guys weigh in, I just want to give our viewers a sense of some of the comments that the former president has made that precipitated this partial gag order just yesterday on his social media platform. Crooked and deranged prosecutor Jack Smith, who has a terrible record of failure, is asking a highly partisan Obama-appointed judge, Tanya Chutkan, who should recuse herself based on the horrible things she has said to silence me. He went on to say these political hacks and thugs are destroying our country. Let's see what happens Monday, meaning what just happened. Will America survive or not? That's just one example of the kinds of things that the judge is saying. You have a First Amendment right. But it's not unlimited.
Right. I mean, and look, the thing that the Trump lawyer, John Lauro, kept going back to in this hearing was that because the former president is running for office, that it would be inappropriate for any kind of curbs to be put on the former president, because he should be able to criticize, for instance, Mike Pence, who he's running against for the Republican nomination. He should be able to criticize Bill Barr, who is likely to be one of the witnesses who is going to be testifying in his trial. So the judge really did struggle with this, but the bottom line is that she believes that she needs to give him some kind of rail. And she also pointed out...
All right, that's enough. So Trump is upset that he can't attack the witnesses. Trump is upset that he can't call people names as a childish name they think is cute. It's a gag order, and a gag order is a gag order. That's what it is. But he thinks he's above the law. That's what it is. Well, I don't mind this guy, and the only thing I mind is he's a little biased. But he kind of explains things right. Here we go. This is Trump who panicked over the Georgia trial because Sidney Powell, now working with the prosecutor, she pleaded the deal. Another person pleaded the deal. This is the people in Georgia that Trump tried to overthrow the voting system, rig it. You know, Trump actually outs himself. Because I remember when he was running for president, he just got elected. Within 2 weeks, he was talking about running again. And he was already setting up, it's rigged, it's this, and they're rigged, this is how they're doing it. And whatever he explained how they were doing it, he was actually doing it. This guy's name is Brian Taylor. Give him a couple of minutes. And he was talking about how Trump is terrified and how he's panicking over it. Give him a minute. Here's Brian Taylor.
Here's how you know Donald Trump is panicking right now. Only days ago, we received the news that former Trump attorney Sidney Powell has agreed to cooperate with prosecutors in Fulton County, making it all but certain that she'll aid Fannie Willis's office in her prosecution of Donald Trump. And so now, like clockwork, Donald Trump is doing what he always does when someone loses their political convenience and pretends that he never even met the person. He took to Truth Social, writing, Sidney Powell was one of millions and millions of people who thought, and in ever-increasing numbers still think, correctly that the 2020 presidential election was rigged and stolen, and our country is being absolutely destroyed because of it. Despite the fake news reports to the contrary, and without even reaching out to ask the Trump campaign, Ms. Powell was not my attorney and never was. In fact, she would have been conflicted. Ms. Powell did a valiant job of representing a very unfairly treated and governmentally abused General Mike Flynn, but to no avail. His prosecution, despite the facts, was ruthless. He was an innocent man, much like many other innocent people who are being persecuted by this now fascist government of ours, and I was honored to give him a full pardon. Now, of course, the suggestion that Powell was, quote, not my attorney and never was, is perhaps undermined by this tweet from Donald Trump from November of 2020, where he tweeted, "I look forward to Mayor Giuliani spearheading the legal effort to defend our rights to free and fair elections. Rudy Giuliani, Joseph DiGenova, Victoria Tensing, Sidney Powell, and Jenna Ellis, a truly great team added to our other wonderful lawyers and representatives." Whoops. And if that wasn't enough, Powell also testified to the January 6th committee that, apart from being Trump's attorney, he also asked her to be special counsel.
As to promise the job of special counsel, the now discredited former Trump campaign lawyer Sidney Powell at a late-night meeting on December 18th.
I know on Friday he had asked me to be special counsel to address the election issues and to collect evidence, and he was extremely frustrated with the lack of, I would call it, law enforcement by any of the government agencies that are supposed to act to protect the rule of law in our republic.
So despite evidence that she was his attorney and that he asked her to be special counsel, somehow we're supposed to believe that he barely knew her. Got it. And by the way, this isn't a new tactic for Donald Trump. Anytime that anyone in his orbit becomes inconvenient for him, he suddenly doesn't know them anymore. This is the same guy who said that Paul Manafort, his campaign chairman, quote, came into the campaign very late and was with us for a short period of time. He called George Papadopoulos, his foreign policy advisor, a low-level volunteer. He said of Gordon Sondland, his EU ambassador and campaign donor, "I have not spoken to him much. This is not a man I know well." He said Michael Cohen, his own lawyer and fixer, did a, quote, tiny, tiny fraction of his legal work. I swear, if Don Jr. ever ratted out his father, guaranteed Trump would demand a DNA test to confirm they were even related. In fact, his poor track record with his own hires is so obvious that even Fox's Bret Baier called him out on it on Fox's Air.
In 2016, you said that. "I'm going to surround myself with only the best and most serious people."
Well, I did do that, and we had tremendous, look, we had the best economy we've ever had, the world has ever seen.
Your Vice President, Mike Pence, is running against you.
Yeah.
Your Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, she's running against you. Your former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, said he's not supporting you. You mentioned National Security Advisor John Bolton, he's not supporting you either. You mentioned Attorney General Bill Barr, says you shouldn't be president again, calls you the consummate narcissist and troubled man. You recently called and Barr a gutless pig. Your second defense secretary is not supporting you, called you irresponsible. This week, you and your White House called your White House chief of staff, John Kelly, weak and ineffective and born with a very small brain. You called your acting White House chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, a born loser. You called your first secretary of state, Rex Tillerson, dumb as a rock. And your first defense secretary, James Mattis, the world's most overrated general. You called your White House press secretary, Kay Kennedy, milquetoast. And multiple times you've referred to your transportation secretary, Elaine Chao, as Mitch McConnell's China-loving wife. So why did you hire all of them in the first place?
Because I hired 10 to 1 that were fantastic. We had a great economy. We had phenomenal people in charge of the economy. We had phenomenal people in the military. I'm not a fan of Milley, and I'm not a fan of certain of the television people. But I knocked out ISIS. I defeated ISIS. They said, "Mattis, it would take 3 years, and I don't think we can do it." I did it in a period of, like, 4 weeks.
There's a lot of people who praise you for your policies. I just said that.
That's true. Well, I mean, you just went through a list. But don't forget, for everyone you say, I had 10 that love us.
And, of course, as Bret Baier pointed out at the top of that clip, Donald Trump vowed to appoint and surround himself with the best people as president. And just for posterity, this was something he repeated over and over again.
"We need our best people. I know the best people. We know the best negotiators in the world. We have great people. We have the greatest business people in the world right here. Right here. We don't use them. We don't use them. We are going to start using them big league. And by the way, we don't want to ever forget, we're going to have strong borders.
We're going to get the best people. We're going to make the best deals. I joke sometimes, I go, we're going to win, and we're going to win again and again and again, and you're going to be begging me, please, Mr. Trump, please, President Trump, no more victories. We can't take any more victories. I know the best people. I know the best managers. I know the best deal makers. I know people that will make us so strong. I know guys that are so good as managers. A lot of times a deal maker isn't a good manager. And then a manager isn't a good deal maker.
So which is it? Does he surround himself with the best people, or are these people losers, idiots, and milquetoast? Because I'm starting to get mixed signals here. And by the way, these top officials, the people who knew Trump best, defecting has become so obvious that even Joe Biden used some of these quotes, particularly from military officials, in his campaign against Trump back in 2020.
General John Kelly, Donald Trump's former White House chief of staff, calls Trump unhinged, said his dishonesty is astounding. General James Mattis, who served as Trump's Secretary of Defense, says Trump is dangerous and calls him unfit to be commander-in-chief. Donald Trump called those who served losers and suckers. Joe Biden believes they're heroes. The former commander of U.S. Special Operations Forces, Admiral Bill McCraven, supports Joe Biden. So does retired General Stan McChrystal, who led our forces in Afghanistan. He says, I can trust Joe Biden. 22 four-star generals and admirals say Biden would make a better commander-in-chief. It's no wonder Military Times says more active duty service members are supporting Joe Biden.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
And since 2020, there have only been more quotes like these to use. So if Trump ultimately ends up as the nominee, which seems all but certain, I think it's safe to say we can expect to see more ads along these lines, meaning more of Trump's own former allies sounding the alarm the loudest. At some point, even Donald Trump's most loyal supporters have to recognize that maybe, just maybe, the problem here isn't his campaign chair and his foreign policy advisor and his attorneys and his fixer and his Secretary of Defense and his Secretary of State and his Chief of Staff and his Attorney General. Maybe it is the one guy that all of those people have in common, which is Donald Trump himself. Before you go, I need to...
I can't tell you more facts than that. You heard it with your own ears. You heard it with your own ears. Who this guy is. You know, one thing is having memory lapsed. Another thing is forgetting something. Another thing is maybe on the verge of confusion. But it's another thing of being a sociopath, a psychopath, insurrectionist, a traitor to the United States of America, and you should be kicked out of the country. Reading a teleprompter is funny. It's like, you know, when you get these gaffes and everything. And I don't know about you guys, but I have had long hours. I had to read shit. I've had no sleep in 2 days, and then they tell me to read shit, and I couldn't even, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I would have gaffed. I give Biden a curve. 70-something, you're 78 maybe? Flying all around, up almost 24 hours a day, hardly sleeping. Trump is watching Fox News in the White House. And then he has a press conference, and all he has to do is read. And you think all you have to do is read? Okay, cool. It's not as easy as you think. When you're tired, you're jet lagged, and we all had that, blah, blah, blah. You get on the TV, and then everybody calls you delusional or whatever. Well, I take that. I'd rather take that than this guy is a sociopath, a psychopath, getting upset because he can't attack witnesses or attack people who are attacking him like a child. They fined him $5,000 because he did go over his gag order. And this guy wants to be the chief of staff. I can go on and on with this idiot. I can go on and on. One more thing before we get to our story. Morning Joe. Love it. I love my hero, Letitia James. She's a hero. Get the motherfucker. See, that's the problem with Trump. Trump always think he should be better than everybody else, treated better than anybody else, have more money than anybody else, have a bigger house than anybody else, that he has to lie and be on Forbes' list, and they took his ass off. But yet he'll beg for money for $35. Here's Letitia James. Morning Joe reacts to Trump not remembering his own lie. Here we go.
The reality is that none of his behavior, which can best be described as performative, will change what's happening in the courtroom. We are here to enforce the law, and nothing will change that. No attacks, no words, I will not give in. I will not give up. I will only serve justice and enforce the law. Thank you.
Somebody smiling. That's somebody holding four aces while the person across the table is screaming and yelling.
She went on to say it's quite clear in the evidence that he overvalued his property.
Well, I say she's holding four aces because she's holding years and years and years of lies.
This is part of Attorney General's civil fraud trial against Donald Trump, Letitia James. Inside the courtroom, the judge reportedly had to tell Trump to quiet down after prosecutors say the former president's comments were heard across the courtroom during a witness's testimony. According to the AP, the judge then asked the entire room to keep their voices down, quote, particularly if it's meant to influence the testimony. Trump returned to the courtroom this week after attending the first days of the fraud trial against him earlier this month.
You know, Willie, it is so sad. It is so sad what they are doing.
Yeah.
Poor Donald Trump says he's being forced.
He's being dragged in there.
To attend this trial. He's forced because they don't want him to go to Iowa. It's so unfair, he says. Take a look and see.
You can't campaign.
See if you can find the inconsistency.
Do I keep me here instead of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and lots of other great places? They want me to be here. And will you pass tomorrow by any chance?
Probably not.
Okay.
I probably will have a very big tournament, professional golf tournament, at Doral, so probably not.
So Willie,
perfection.
Oh
they're keep,
love it.
They're keeping
oh my God.
Me. They're keeping me from the good people of Iowa.
4 minutes.
They're keeping me from the good people of New Hampshire.
Information.
They're keeping me from the good people of South Carolina. I mean, he almost did a Howard Dean rundown of the states that they were keeping him from. It's so the injustice of it all. How could they be? And then the reporters ask him a couple of minutes later. So you're going to be here tomorrow too, since they're holding you here. Oh, no, I got a golf tournament in Doral. I'm going down to the country club.
Man, oh, man. On and on and on. I love Morning Joe. Here's Mika. One more time.
Working overtime to delay or Donald Trump's legal team working overtime to delay or dismiss several ongoing legal battles involving the former president. First, the Trump team moved to dismiss the indictment in his federal election interference case by claiming presidential immunity. The former president claimed his efforts to overturn his 2020 election loss and remain in the White House were at the, quote, heart of his official responsibilities as president. In New York City, the Trump team filed to have his case dismissed regarding the falsifying of business records, the one related to hush money payments involving adult film actress Stormy Daniels. They argued prosecutors waited too long to bring their case. Next up, the former president's classified documents case, where Trump's lawyers have once again asked Judge Aileen Cannon to postpone the trial until after next year's presidential election, this while he's chatting about nuclear secrets. Also, the former president unexpectedly dismissed a $500 million lawsuit against his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, yesterday, while vowing to revisit it. At a later date, Trump had been scheduled to sit down for a deposition in the case on Monday. Interesting timing. And lastly, Donald Trump's lawyers are expected to ask for a pause in his civil fraud trial today after an irate former president left the courthouse and New York City on Wednesday. His attorneys returned yesterday and informed Judge Arthur Engoron of their plans to seek a stay in the case, where the former president could have to pay a $250 million fine and be stripped of all of his New York state properties. They want to stay in that. They want to delay literally everything. Joining us now, former Watergate prosecutor Jill Winebanks. She's an MSNBC legal analyst, criminal defense attorney, and former Watergate prosecutor.
Well, there you go. We don't need to hear them. Why am I playing this? Because you got to remember who your champion there. So any dotards are supporting Donald Trump. You hate America. That's basically it. You want to see it destroyed. That's basically it. It's clear. Even he endorsed Jim Jordan from Congress. You saw what happened there. 3 times you're out. And I think the Republicans are getting notices saying that this guy does not have the power anymore. He doesn't have the juice anymore. That's it. When we come back, but that's Donald Trump. That's what we have to deal with. Court, lawsuits, civil suits, all that suits. That's what we're, this is a guy who wants to run for president of the United States and who's a fan of the dictators. We're dealing with the Israeli war. We're dealing with inflation. People are mortgaging their house. And you got, I can't even say it anymore. Idiots who are supporting this guy. When we come back, if you criticize Israel, you may be canceled. And when we go, what happened? This is what happened to Jon Stewart. This is what happened to Dave Chappelle. Whose side are you on? Are you on Israel's side? I'd like to know. I'd like to know. Or are you on the Palestinian side? Because you can't be neutral. You can't be neutral. What they did in Israel, what the Gaza people did in Israel is just, they should be held accountable, but how do you catch them? I want to see each one of those guilty people with their heads off, shot in the brain. But how do you find them? How do you find them? How do you find them? We'll be right back with our top stories. If you criticize Israel, your show may be canceled. We'll be right back after this.
I'm telling you, oh, how I feel. Gonna set your mind. Don't you dare jump on, jump on, get on me. Yeah.
Michael Jackson. You know what would be fun? I interviewed, I don't know if I can do it. It might screw up everything, but I'm curious to do it. I interviewed, allegedly, Michael Jackson's son. Now, this is like in the archives. When was it, like 5 years ago? It would be fun to see how I interviewed 5 years ago, how I sounded 5 years ago, and how this guy was. I don't know if I can do it. Bear with me. Let me see if I can do that. Let me go here. Okay, I'm out of the studio. And this would be fun. Let me see if I can. Let me see if it shows up. Michael Jackson. Because if it shows up, it'll be interesting. Let me see if it shows up. Damn it, it didn't show up. Let me put in son. I can't remember his name. Jackson's son. Let's see if it shows up. Didn't show up. I thought it would be fun, though. B. Howard. All right, let me put in B. Howard. Let me see. Hold on. Let's see if it shows up. B. That was who he was. Let me see. I-R-D. Let's see if it shows up. There it is. When was this? 2016. This interview was 2016. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. Oh, my God, 9 years ago. This is 9 years ago. Had a lot of listens. I was just getting used to Blog Talk at the time. I was getting used to Blog Talk at the time. I didn't know where I was going. I was inundated with interviews. I was not used to interviewing. I didn't go to communication school. I didn't go to broadcasting school. So an agent contacted us. Let me see if I could do this. This is interesting. So an agent contacted us. At that time, our show was just spot on, man. Everybody wanted to come on our show. So he says to us, I got Michael Jackson's son. I got Michael Jackson's son. I didn't, you know, what, blanket? I mean, blanket was blanket even born? Well, maybe blanket. He goes, no. It's B. Howard. I go, oh, God. This one says 7 years ago, but okay. I don't like to hear myself interview. All the shows that I've done, I'm not in the studio, so if anybody's in the studio, bear with me, I'll get with you. All the shows that I've done, I have never listened to my interviews. This will be the first time I'm listening to the interview I did 7 years ago. 7 years ago. I mean, this might be a shock because, I mean, think about how you sounded 7 years ago. Well, anyway, the agent says I got his B. Howard. I go, come on, this is a troll. And watch, here you go. Let me see if I can do it. I don't know if it's going to play or not. This is the first time I'm doing it. But if it does play, here's Brian Hammer Jackson 7 years ago. Interviewing, allegedly, Michael Jackson's son, B. Howard. At that time, he had an album coming out. Listen how he sounds, and you see what happens. Here we go. Hope it plays.
Choose your next word carefully.
Oh, that was not supposed to come on.
They may be.
We worked hard to get it in.
Hello.
Madman. Blasphemy! This is madness!
This! Well, apparently Ellen was with me. We're doing a lot of screw-ups on the air. This is going to go south. I forgot all about this. But again, hang in there. Because Michael Jackson's son, B. Howard, and you got to hear him. Like I said, I did not review the interview. I did not hear the interview after I did it. Goodbye. They thanked me. Goodbye. I put it away in archives. But here it is. Here's that interview 7 years ago and how we sounded 7 years ago. Ellen and Brian.
Hey, everybody. This is Notes Behind the Music. This is Brian Hammer Jackson with Ellen Johnson. Our special guest will be B. Howard with his number one song. He's platinum. Song, Don't Say You Love Me, is D-S-Y-L-E-M. everybody. This is his number one song, going platinum. It is already platinum. See, Holler, don't see.
Across the room, I see you waiting. Maybe down on this couch, there's no stopping us now. But when we're through, don't say you love me. You know that I'm loving you. Don't say you love me. Just don't say you love me. You know that I'm loving you. Don't say you love me. Nothing, not in love with you. Don't talk to my mind now. It's gonna be me and you tonight. Don't say you love me. Anybody right now? The moment's here right now. Right now. Don't say you love me, girl. You might think I'm crazy, but I'm serious. I'm serious. Hoping you know now. You might think I'm jealous, cause I need your love. Girl, you know my style. Don't say you love me. Don't talk to the lights down. It's gonna be me. Don't say you love me. Don't say you love me. Anybody right round? Just don't say you love me. Don't say you love me. Don't talk to the lights down. It's gonna be me and you tonight. Don't say you love me. Anybody right round? The moment's here right now. Right now. Don't say you love me. Girl.
Put it on lockdown. Baby girl, you're hot now. Let them know when you're not round. I make a bust like a pump round. Damn, that's my babe. I make her go crazy. Forever my lady. Beyonce, Jay-Z, let's have a baby. Last time I got it, I blew it, blew it. Now tell them watch how I do it, do it. Girl, never lose again. You let me bring a friend to tell your girl to come on in. Girl, you could be Whitney, the queen of the night. You could just come in and do what I like. Blowing that whistle, we handing our stripes. We shining in dark, we'll be blinding the light.
Girl. Don't say you love me. I know you do. Just don't say you love me. Oh. Just don't say you love me. Just don't say you love me. You might think I'm crazy, but I'm serious. I'm serious. I'm serious about you, babe. You might think I'm jealous, cause I need your love. I need your love. Girl, you know my style. It's me and you.
We get this done.
It's me and you.
And I like it sometimes.
Don't say you love me. Just don't say you love me.
Don't say you love me.
Wow. Wow. That's B. Howard. Wow. Now we start the interview. Okay, 7 years ago. Ellen says that I've been on longer than that. I should have got my chops. A lot of mistakes. Like I said, I have never heard this. I do an interview and I say goodbye. I'm on to the next. Here's the interview. And we were booked up, man. I mean, we had Sinbad. We had everybody. We were just booked up. I was exhausted. I was exhausted. Then we got away from music and we hit politics and the rest is history. We're going to go back into music. I did some videos over the weekend. We'll talk about that later. But here's the interview. Guy, my voice may be different. I don't know. You judge. Brian Hammer Jackson. Miss Johnson, Ellen Johnson, but B. Howard, allegedly Michael Jackson's son. You decide. Listen to him.
That's B. Howard, everyone. Don't say you love me. E-S-Y-L-M. Don't say you love me. We expect him in the studio any minute. Ellen's going to give me a little background. This is Notes Behind the Music, everyone. We do double duty. And this show is about, it's about artists. And it's all about artists, moving them forward, giving them airplay, putting them on a level playing field with the top artists around the world. There's only a small venue of people or small venues where...
Blah, 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 blah. Let's get to it. Let's get to it. All right. Here we go. Ellen comes in here.
Lee Howard is a multi-platinum producer, songwriter, and singer. He's headlined the Consumer Electronics Show along with Rick Ross, and his album is titled Nothing to Prove. And Lee Howard has worked with U.S. artists such as Neo, Chris Brown, Missy Elliott, Ciara, Jason Derulo, Trey Songz, Vanessa Hudgens. He's worked with Jay Sean and Lupe Fiasco. The list also includes international acts such as Win Z, Japanese pop diva Kota Kumi, Risa Hirako, K-pop sensation Jay Park, and Nigerian recording acts MC Galaxy and Two-Face Ibia. A pivotal step in B. Howard's career was his production of K. Nyako's song.
Okay, blah, 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 blah. Let's get to the interview. Let me see.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're holding a studio for B. Howard. And Ellen will be right. We're going to continue some truth.
Now, at this point, we're sweating. We're going to try to stall as much as we can. Where in the fuck is B. Howard? We promoted it. We did everything we could. Where is he? We're trying to stall and stall. At this point, I did not have enough, juice to stall. So we're stalling. This guy's not coming in the studio. We go to a commercial. We're going this. I'm whispering to Ellen, where the fuck is he? Ellen goes, I don't know. I'm supposed to be here. So it's a clusterfuck. Here we go. Okay, I screwed up. Come on, come on. Get me back here. Wow, I screwed up. Hold on. Bear with me because I'm trying to fast forward this. I'm trying to get to the interview.
Choose in the office.
Just work, work, work. Lots of things. I had a, the most recent things I've got are
a film that I worked on. I screwed up completely. I got a different, let me see if I can get back. Okay, got him back. Whew. That was a different interview from a major producer. Let me see if I can get him back. We're almost there. Like I said, I've never done this before. Okay, we're stalling. We're stalling. We're having panic attacks at this point. We're still, here we go.
Smile. Independent artist, baby. The only difference between an independent artist and a commercial artist is because they got more game, they got more marketing.
Meanwhile, Ellen's whispering, I can't get him. I'm saying, I gotta get on the air. 7 years ago, everything's a clusterfuck. Where is B. Howard? Let me see here.
Perfect imperfections.
Not coming. We're stalling with other music. We're stalling. I'm going to cancel the show. We're out of there. We're going to take the ass whooping. We let everybody down. B didn't show up. Then all of a sudden, I'm playing this song.
Michael's bad, but he's badder. He's here. He's here. You can hear the girl scream. Listen, let me see. Lenora, let me hear you scream. Ellen, let me hear you scream. Come on.
I'm muted. How can you hear me scream?
I want to hear some screaming.
Well, you're unmuted now. Okay, all right. Let's scream. All right, come on, Ellen. Let's give him a scream. Ready?
You are the finest platinum artist. His latest single.
Okay, that's my scream.
There you go.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen. Gentlemen, his latest single, Don't Say You Love Me, or if you want to be cool, is D-S-Y-L-M. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is in the studio.
Okay, on that mess, here's his voice. Here's his voice. 7 years ago, give me a break. 7 years ago, give me a break. I never heard this. Here we go. We're going to hear B. Howard's voice, allegedly Michael Jackson's son. You be the judge.
Howard, everybody!
Hey, what's going on?
Hey.
Hey, that is a grand entrance, I tell you.
Oh, man, welcome to the studio. Look at you, man. You're all pretty and stuff. Look at you singing them songs. You got the whole package, you know. There are some people who look like a pig and they got that voice, but look at you. You're all pretty and you're singing. You don't even have to sing. You just walk in and say, I'm B. Howard. I'm B. Howard. People just scream and serve you food.
Gosh.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, man. My executive producer, Ellen, and I want to thank, he's a shy man, humble man, but I want to just thank him first off, Mr. Jordan, man. Jordan, who introduced us to the great Walter O'Brien, and now you know. I'm going to be his best friend because he hangs around with some great, cool people. He really does.
Absolutely. Jordan is really one of the greatest guys ever. I really love that guy. I really love him. Great.
Yes, he really is great.
Yeah.
You know, bringing you and Walter to us, that was so awesome.
You know, B. Howard, I'm going to tell you something. I looked at you and I said, you know, you gave me chills. I'm a straight man and you gave me chills. Damn you. I'm confused.
So that's a little bit of, let me see if you can hear a little bit more of him. The interview gets a little, after we get all the other bullshit out of the way, it gets serious because I start asking him about Michael. I start asking him about Janet. And he told the truth. I can't get it when I...
Just sonic on the cheek and then I got any meat. I was like, oh my God, who is this? And then I started placing songs. And then I ended up doing, you know, Drew Hill to Neo to, you know, Vanessa Hudgens, the World Cup and so forth today with Jason Derulo. It was a tough ride. You know, most of my influence have been, you know, everybody around me and my family. But musically, I really liked A-ha and Tears for Fears to start off with, and they were really great to me. And Phil Collins as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Genesis and Phil Collins.
There you go. That was a little flashback to the past. Damn. It got to be a really good interview later on. I mean, he started talking about himself. Then we asked him. Then I asked him, are you really Michael Jackson's son? You should hear his reply. And then what he went through, what about the DNA? We got really serious about it. He replied. It's a very interesting interview. One of the, you know, after the silliness, you know, stopped, it was one of the best interviews, and he was really forward about it. We joked, and he invited me places, and he's one cool dude. He is one cool dude. B. Howard, everybody. Just a flash. I didn't think it was going to work. I'm in the studio now. I didn't think it was going to work, but it did work. That was 7 years ago. 7 years ago. So when we come back, the title of our show. We have 611s in the studio. I'm not going to go through them. If they want to talk, you know the rules. All you have to do is hit one. You hit one, I open your mic. That's it. Until then, I'm doing the show. I'm not even going to bother going to your mics anymore. There was a lot of good interviews. The best interview I can tell you was Maya Haley. Oh, she was really honest about Alex Haley, who wrote Roots. Nobody knew that Maya Haley was the co-writer of Roots, that they got secretly married, that he hid her from everybody. She was not allowed. I mean, he forbid her. She was like a sex slave that came out. He hid her. He abused her. Hid. H-I-D. Hid. Not hit. Not H-I-T. Hid her from the public. While he would carouse with other women to keep his thing on as a single man, he would, fuck these women in front of his wife, you know, and all this shit, and she couldn't say shit. So Maya started to talk about all this shit, really how bad Alex Haley was. And there was rumors going around that Alex Haley really steal Roots from another person. Well, Maya answered that question. And it was really weird. Again, I don't know when that show was, maybe 8 years ago. We had nothing but clergy in the studio because they just loved Maya. I mean, it was packed. She was a queen. Maya and I became friends. She sent me another book. We autographed. We talked on the phone a lot. I miss her. I haven't talked to her in about 3 years, maybe 4 years. Her health was fading. I'm hoping she's okay. I'm going to Google. I'm doing this live on the air. I don't know, and I don't want to do this, but I got to. Maya Haley, I wonder if she's still alive. I'm hoping she is, because she did have bad health. I don't know. Is it MIA? Or is it, I think she used to go at M. No, that's not her. Let me see. Let me try this. Maya Haley. Let me try Roots. Let me see if that'll hit me to the right one. Alex Haley Roots. Come on, Maya. Let me see. Let's see. Maya Haley. Dr. Maya Haley, that's who she is. She's a doctor, by the way. Yeah, there she is. All right, let's see if she's still alive. Let me see. She's there's my girl. What a beautiful girl. What is her official name? She did go under MyMY, but what is her official name? She went under MY Haley, H-A-L-E-Y. Okay, let me see if she's alive. My H-A-L-E-Y. Roots, is she alive? I have her phone number somewhere. I think it's my other phone. Let me see. It doesn't say she died. My Haley, widow of Roots author, Haley published it. No, I think she's still alive. My Haley welcomes. Huh. Maybe after the show, I'm going to visit her website, give her a howdy doody. Give her a howdy doody. That's my girl right there, my Haley. Beautiful lady. Yeah. I'm going to give her, see if I can, oh, here's her contact. I'll do that later after the show. I'd love to talk to her again. All right, so flashing back, here we go. Here we go, everybody. I don't know where people stand. Israel, Palestinian. Are you a Jew hater? Do you hate the Jews? What did the Jews ever do to you? The thing Jewish. If you're not a Jew, if you're not Jewish, you cannot say Jew. So you say Jewish. That's a polite thing to do. Damn, I can't get B. Howard out of my head. It was a funny interview. Man, 7 years ago. Fuck. We had them all. All right, I promised you, if you criticize Israel, your show will be canceled. Here's what happened to Jon Stewart. Here's what happened to Dave Chappelle. And it's really, really bad. And we'll be right back and say what happened to them. I need coffee.
Mm-hmm. gonna make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turned up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street with not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them? Got a broken bottle top and a one-man show. They follow each other on the wind and know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one gets to know. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways, and no, nothing's gonna bend any clearer. If you wanna make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make a change.
All right. You know what? Well, I'm on this kick. I wonder. Because it was a great interview. Should I try it? I wonder if I got my Haley. I mean, it was a great interview. She spilled the beans on Alex Haley, the bastard. I'm just, it's only going to take me a minute. I'll do it out in the air. I wonder, let me see. Let me see if I have her. Let's see. Oh, my God, I do. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Before we, here, let's try this again. Dr. Mai Haley co-wrote the miniseries Roots with her husband, Alex Haley. This was, no, I said 3 years ago. This is more than 3 years ago. The fuck? No, 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 no. How could it be 3 years ago? This was back in, let me see here. No way. This was back in 16. Let me see. This was back in 2020. This is 2020. Couldn't be over 20 years ago. I was not on the air. This is 2013. What the fuck? Wait a minute. 20. I'm sorry. That was over 3 years ago. But this is 2013. So I guess they interviewed her twice. So 2013. 10 years ago? 10 years ago? Damn. I'm just curious. This is how I sounded 10 years ago. I must have, okay, 10 years ago, I'm trying to think. I was probably on the air a year ago. This is 10 years ago. Brian, I don't know who was, I wonder who was my executive producer. I wonder if it was Kelly. 10 years ago, Mai Haley. Widow of, I don't know. You know, it's going to sound, like I said, I'm getting used to the mic. I'm not going to explain anything and see how stupid I am. I was really stupid. I could have gone for it, but I was dumb. 10 years ago, here we go. This is interesting. Mai Haley, the widow of author Haley.
I don't want you to look each other in the eyes.
Die. But we find out who we are. The kind of character who we are out of crisis. We can hide who we are
what?
When everything is calm.
What?
But out of crisis,
what?
Your character comes out.
What?
You hurt my heart.
What?
You hurt my heart when you said, what about Jesse Jackson and
okay,
everything?
Where's my
switching from academic writing into novel writing. And not only that, once he came to our
war, and you know what happened. Slain, laying dead in the street. Whether he's right or wrong, die. But we find out who we are when Trayvon Martin, author Alex Haley.
This was 10 years ago.
Kelly, are you talking to me?
Kelly.
Yeah, I'm here.
There you go, Kelly.
Somebody's buzzing me. Dr. Mai Haley.
Oh, no.
She's an author, keynote.
Kelly was my executive producer. Kelly was the one who started the show. Kelly was the one who brought in the guests. I haven't heard Kelly's voice in 10 years. This is Kelly, the executive producer of Brian Howard Jackson's show. She told me, please be nice to her. Don't be stupid. Give her the respect that you give. She was the one who brought it to my attention. She goes, you know, you interview women differently than you do men. I go, no, I don't. She goes, yes, you do. When men come on, you are like a professional. I go, okay. When women come on, you talk about their breasts and you talk sexy to them and everything like this. You know, I go, I do not. So we had this. She goes, yes, you do. There's a difference between you interviewing men than you interviewing women. Now, she says, Mai Haley, she's a doctor, by the way. She has a PhD. She's Dr. Mai Haley. Please be respectful. I go, I am. I'm respectful. And this is how it went.
Original speaker, widow of the celebrated author, Alex Haley. She's a contributor to Roots and author of the epic Civil War novel. Here's where she's going to get mad at me. Make sure you lock the door so she doesn't leave, because I'm going to mispronounce the name. Your name is Toby.
And you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. Boy, it was powerful. This is a no-win situation. Well, I need to get out of here about an hour and a half. You know what I mean? I survived it, and I'm at the end of it.
Out of kids who are dying, and so forth. There's some big names.
I just want to have the show open.
She has strict orders today. Diane, what are your orders today?
Only allow people on that's on the guest.
It's funny, my God, Diane. Diane was the, she was the announcer, she was the thing. Hearing Diane's voice, this was 10 years ago. Hearing Diane was the executive, well, Kelly was the executive producer, but Diane was the on-air personality. And to hear that, so the opening, and if you're not a fan of Brian and Hammer Jackson, you wouldn't recognize it, but I got to give you the background. And I just want to hear how we open the show. Here we go.
They're powerful people. Everybody went through a struggle. Their old
story. It has a happy ending. Oh, okay.
Sponsored by Computer Records 2012. We support Brian the Hammer Jackson, and so should you.
Hi, this is Sally Kirkland, and I'm on the air with Brian Hammer Jackson, and I do want to have his baby.
Good morning, everybody. Apparently, Kelly was messing with my opening theme.
No, I wasn't.
How did I get my name is Toby in my theme? Diane.
I have no idea.
I did it.
Oh.
In honor of Ruth.
Okay. Well, I thought it was in honor of Pastor Jones.
I'll be right back.
I know. I haven't forgotten Pastor Jones saying that to me. Good morning, everybody. This is Brian Hammer Jackson Show. I'm with the MVP On Demand Network via BTR Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. We're global. They're listening to us all over the world. I got a letter from the soldier. Remember I told you guys about a soldier? Oh, you guys remember his letter. This is like 4 months ago. He wrote us a letter that he's in South Korea. He's listening to the show. And he had some kind of, I forgot. But anyway, we did a good show. He's listening today. Salute, hurrah. He's on our side. He's South Korea, everybody. So I'm going to go really quickly. We have some very special guests. I invited the most intellectual, powerful minds today to help us interview Dr. Mai Haley. And we're going to introduce those powerful minds. These people, I see Toy Moy Moore here. These people are fantastic. They're intellectual. I can't say enough about them, man. You're going to meet them all. They're powerful people. Everybody went through a struggle. They're overachievers. And in honor of Dr. Mai Haley, I had to bring in the best that influenced me. Well, we lost Toy Moore. Oh, no. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to introduce one of those guests today. We're going to do a round table. We have roundhouse meeting kind of thing, because you know, we'll just go around, because you have a lot of good questions. I'm sure she would love to answer. And then if we have time, you know me, I have to do my shenanigans. Come on, Ms. Moore.
Kelly, no, Toy.
No, I wouldn't be mean. We're all going to play a game, all of us, in honor of, yes, you're going to play too, Carrie, in honor of Dr. Mai Haley. All right, everybody, I'm going to talk really quickly. We got a lot of things to get done here. People are coming in. And and he was upset. Exactly. And I was thinking, okay, you know, I'm not going to call the man's show. It's a man's show. This will be on Facebook. I'd rather take the New Jersey cops. Yeah, you take your New Jersey cops who are on the take from the mafia. 10 times on your show. Roots, an author of the epic Civil War novel. Here's where she's going to get mad at me. Make sure you lock the door so she doesn't...
I mean, and that's where we would eventually start working for Roots. In fact, not eventually, but immediately. Lubester.
I practice all of you. Mispronounced Trayvon Roots, an author of the epic Civil War novel. Here's where she's going to get mad at me.
Come on.
Make sure author move the family to Columbus.
Or...
Of course. How dare you, Kelly, putting that wrong information to me. Okay, even 1964, and you know what happened with going on in
74.
Oh, sorry, 74. You're a young chick. But
I think I was about 22.
Uh-huh. 22. I know how you met him, too. Would you like to tell us how you met him?
Well, let's see. We had a two-part meeting. The first part was when he came to our campus, and I was about to defend my dissertation the next day, but I opted to go see Alex rather than prepare for that. And the second part was when he sent me a telegram and a ticket to come to Jamaica where he was living, and that's where we would eventually start working for Roots. In fact, not eventually, but immediately.
Now, this was after he did Malcolm X, am I correct?
Correct.
Now, did you know about, did you read Malcolm X by Alex Haley at the time?
You know, not only did I read Malcolm X, but I was devoted to reading Malcolm X every year after I first read it. And not only that, the students that I counseled would come into my office with these dog-eared copies of the autobiography, and every single one of us was touched by the passage of where Malcolm started to reinvent himself, where he had been in solitary confinement. So it was the last two-thirds of the book. And 18 months later, I walked into Doubleday in the midst of a snowstorm in New York and delivered the copy.
Wow. Now,
hiding out from everybody who was mad at him. The publisher was mad at him because he had already missed every deadline and reinvent himself. So can I.
Oh, honored. Here she goes. She grew up under her grandmother's watchful wise toilet. Wow. Right off the bat. No, 1950?
1974.
Of course. How dare you, Kelly, putting that wrong information to me. Okay, even 1964, and you know what happened with going on in
74.
Oh, sorry, 74. You're a young chick. Talk to me, but you're growing up. You grew up in the South.
Well,
when you first met,
yeah,
that was pretty bad too, though. But how old were you? I know the story, but how old were you when you met the author, Alex Haley?
I think I was about 22.
Uh-huh.
There you go. It was a very interesting interview. Very interesting interview. It's good to hear executive producer Kelly and Diane was there. It was a good thing. You know what I'll do is, I think when I can't make it on air, I think I would play the best of. And I think I would play those two because it really was a good interview towards the middle. We got serious. Everybody came in. Pastors and clergy and lawyers came in and they asked questions. It was one of the best shows. And I guess when I can't make it, I will use it as the best of because it was. She is just so cute. And like I said, later on we became friends and we called each other and we talked on the phone with each other and smooths with each other. I can't believe that was 10 years ago. 10 freaking years ago. Wow. 10 years ago that interview was. If you criticize Israel, your show may be canceled. Here's what happened to Jon Stewart. There you go. Let me get this out of here. I went through a lot of executive producers, went through a lot of morning crews, just a lot of morning crews, man. Where I'm trying to get it right now. Here we go, Dave Chappelle. Okay, get rid of that. Well, I got rid of everything. Let's start with Dave first. So anyway, so Dave Chappelle's doing a show. He's doing a show with transgender. They walked out of him. Now, here's the headline right here. Some walked out on Dave Chappelle. They walked out on his Boston show over Israel comments. Some of the audience members, they reportedly walked out on Dave. He had a show in Boston last Thursday after the comedian, what he did was he criticized Israel's bombing of Gaza. This is according to Wall Street Journal. Chappelle, he addressed the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas during a TD Garden show. He first condemned a Palestinian militant group on the attack on Israel. That's as the Wall Street Journal reported. However, the comic also criticized what he described as war crimes in Gaza and accused the U.S. of abetting the slaughter of innocent civilians. That's what the news outlet reported. The commotion reported began after Chappelle said he didn't think students should lose job offers for supporting Palestinians. When the audience member yelled for Chappelle to shut up, the comedian critiqued the Israeli government for cutting off water and basic supplies to Gaza and accused the Middle East nation of killing innocent people. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. An audience member was reportedly split while some cheered, some shouted, "Free Palestine." Others yelled, "What about Hamas?" Or got up and left. This is near the end of the show. Chappelle addressed the Israeli policies and the Hamas attacks and said two wrongs don't make a right, according to the news outlet. As a spokeswoman for Chappelle told the Wall Street Journal, he denies being in Boston that night, though the TD Garden website indicates he performed two shows for his stand-up comedy tour on Thursday and Friday. Boston.com has reached out to TD Garden to confirm that the show was held as scheduled. See, you know, this is what's dangerous. We knew he was there. Here's what's dangerous about this bullshit. When AI is coming and you have a bad show, you can blame AI. Oh, it wasn't me. It was some AI thing. And some people are going to believe that. So we don't have AI perfected yet. So he can say, just like Donald Trump, it wasn't me. We know it was you. He resists with AI hasn't been. But when AI coming in 5 years, he can say that shit. And some of you are going to go, shit, maybe it wasn't him. Maybe it was AI. He could blame it on AI. I'm going to sue them and never put the lawsuit. See, this is what's going to fuck up that shit. So that's what's happening to Chappelle. Now, I'm going to see, I think it's going to be hard to find, but usually he tapes the shit. So I'm going to put in, oh, what do you know, right here. Oh, it's a news story. Here we go, right here.
Chappelle causing controversy while speaking about the ongoing war during a recent show at the TD Garden. People who attended Thursday night's show tell the Wall Street Journal Chappelle, who is Muslim, referred to what is happening in Gaza as war crimes and said students should not lose their job offers for supporting Palestinians. Some in the crowd cheered his comments while others got up and left. WBC and
well, there you go. I didn't know Chappelle was Muslim. Who knew? Who knew? And if you go to a Chappelle show and you criticize him, Chappelle doesn't, he's not going to run, he's going to tell you to shut the fuck up. Here's what happened, and this has nothing to do with Israel and Palestine, but this is what happens when you criticize. If you go to Dave Chappelle's show, you better act correctly or else this is what happened to this one guy. Here we go.
As Israel and Hamas war continues to play out in front of the world, many are now angrily speaking up. For the last several months, Dave Chappelle has been touring the United States in celebration of his 50th birthday with a brand new stand-up set. On Thursday and Friday, a part of these newest dates, Chappelle appeared at the TD Garden in Boston for a pair of sold-out shows. where he would, for the first time publicly, address the ongoing war between Israel and Palestine. And this is when the show would take a turn, as his comments would receive immense criticism from some of those in attendance. According to the Wall Street Journal, during the show, Chappelle would criticize the United States for supporting Israel's war crimes against Palestine. Chappelle's criticism would lead to an audience member heckling him, telling Chappelle to shut the F up. Reporter for the Wall Street Journal, Sabrina Siddiqui, who did not attend the show herself, summarized several accounts of that night. On Saturday, Siddiqui tweeted, "Here's how it went down, per attendees. Chappelle condemned the October 7th Hamas attacks, but said it was wrong for the students to lose job offers over their support for Palestine. This prompted an audience member to shout, 'Shut the F up, Dave.' This is what triggered more of a reaction from Chappelle, according to attendees. He said the Hamas attacks were not an excuse to cut off water, electricity, etc., or commit war crimes. Some people in attendance cheered and shouted, 'Free Palestine,' while others yelled, 'What about Hamas?' A couple of attendees say Dave also said 'Free Palestine,' but those in the crowd say they did not hear him say that. Later in his show, Chappelle said of the October 7th attacks and the Israeli government's Gaza siege that two wrongs don't make a right. Reach for comment, a Chappelle spokeswoman said.
Okay. I thought that was Chappelle. Well, there you go. Should a comedian voice themselves? I mean, they are human. They are human. I mean, come on. Come on. Whatever happened to comedy? Here's Dave Chappelle. I don't know. All right, everybody wants to be a news person. I'm trying to get Chappelle. But, okay, everybody wants to be a news asshole. Get themselves in the news and that. That's not what I'm looking for. So, there you go. He's not the only one. Not the only one. There's one more. Headline. Jon Stewart's show canceled as Apple fears Israel and China problems. You know, when now we're censoring comedians. I mean, this is the only one place that was sacred that they could be inappropriate. That's why we go to the shows. When you start censoring comedians, what's going on? That's what Jon Stewart does. He talks about the government. He talks about this. He talks about that. That's what they do. That's what comedians do. They talk about what's going on. Jon Stewart, here it is. Jon Stewart, highly anticipated return to television with the problem with Jon Stewart. That's the name of the show. It came to an end. He and Apple executive had decided to part ways, meaning that they both said, fuck you. The show's staff was informed about the show's end just as the taping for the third season was set to begin. Apple had concerns about, now Apple, you got to understand Apple where Apple is. If you want to get into politics, Apple's in bed with China. If I remember right, they got an office in China. A lot of their parts come from China. That being said, Apple had concerns about the subject matter Stewart planned to cover in the upcoming season, including China, Israel, and artificial intelligence. Jon Stewart ruled in post 9/11. Well, it's just those people's careers, blah, 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 blah. According to the New York Times, Mr. Stewart and Apple executive decided to part ways in recent days. Two of the people said members of the show staff was informed about its end on Thursday, taping of episodes for the third season that was scheduled to begin with a couple of weeks. Here it is. You have to hear my voice. This is according, and I can't get the video. They have some stupid video. Hold on. Okay, here it is. Here we go. Finally you get to hear Jon Stewart.
Apple has reportedly...
Well, America, it's been a pleasure.
Apple has reportedly scrapped its show, The Problem with Jon Stewart, weeks before shooting its third season.
Oops, I stepped in it again. What have I done?
The comedy news show on Apple TV Plus features unfiltered critiques of current affairs.
When it comes to children that have died, you don't give a flying...
But according to the New York Times, Stewart told staff on Thursday that topics related to China and AI concerned Apple executives. There were allegedly disagreements over guests as well. The Hollywood Reporter sources said Apple told Stewart they needed to be aligned on the show topics. When Stewart wanted full creative control, the company threatened to cancel, so the former Daily Show host walked away. Apple did not respond to a request for comment. American companies have adjusted entertainment with China in mind before, often to have a better chance of getting media in front of the country's massive audience. In the 2012 remake of Red Dawn, MGM initially filmed the movie with Chinese villains. State media published pushback, so MGM replaced the Chinese villains with North Koreans, digitally altering each flag and symbol. Apple's decision for its streaming platform comes as CEO Tim Cook visits China for the second time this year. iPhone 15 sales are sluggish there, and Cook is meeting with the information technology minister after the government announced new regulation for app stores. While the political ties between the U.S. and China are delicate, Apple's working to develop a stronger relationship with the country as it competes with Huawei in the smartphone market.
Thanks for watching. Stradero News is on.
There you go. It's all about money. There you go. You know, I've been on the air for about, how long have I been on the air? See, there's 150 minutes. What is 150 minutes? 2 hours? No, 2 hours is 120 minutes. So I've been on the air for almost 2 hours, 2 hours and a half by myself without talking to someone, just me doing the show. Hey, I broke a record. So what am I going to do now? I mean, I could go to my go-to because the girls are not here. See, when the girls are here, I can't go to my go-to. You know what I'm going to go to my go-to? Yes, I am. I'm going to go relationship on your ass. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do. And when I go relationship, you know where I go to. Tom Likas, everybody.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great.
And I mean that. How are you doing?
Oh, good.
I've been listening. I can't believe it. I'm talking to Tom Likas.
Neither can I.
Fun. First time for everything. I'm glad I had that beer at lunch. Okay, Tom, I think I caught you in your own logic. You're trying to say that women should be taught early on what they can expect if they're good looking, for what they can get from men. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay, well, how is that work with the rules of Likas 101?
There's no contradiction.
Men aren't supposed to spend money on women.
They're not. I'm not saying that men should spend money on these women when they grow up. I'm just saying they will. And if you're the parent of a hot little girl, you might as well prepare her for what she's in for later.
What are you training her for then if men shouldn't spend money on her? Then she's going to go out.
No. Dear.
Any skills
dear,
to make her own money.
First of all, dear, you're assuming every man in America is listening to me? And
no,
every man in America is doing what I say? I mean, we know from the phone calls we get that there are men who listen to what I say, and there are many who don't.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that there's always going to be some guy who thinks if he spends enough money, he can get the hottest chick. And you know what? He can.
Oh, hey, that's how I got married the first time.
All right.
I'm not saying it doesn't exist.
Right. So if you have a hot young girl, what you want to do is prepare her for what she's in for as an adult. What's the point of going to school, studying hard, working hard? She should work hard in her appearance. You should be going to the gym early on, working out.
Any woman should be doing that. Any man should be doing that.
No. I'm not talking about for health purposes. There's a certain level of cardiovascular exercise that you need for health purposes. I'm talking about for attractiveness purposes, going beyond health.
Well, I agree. I mean, I agree.
If your little girl is 160 pounds and 5'4", there's no point. You better prepare her for going to college, studying hard, because no man's going to pay her bills when she grows up.
Why not prepare even the good-looking ones for college? Why not? And then they're going to be less of a drag on the man.
Well, put it this way. Again, if a man could control what men do and what women do, sure, I'd love to do that. But in the real world, there are guys who are going to pay to get women like that.
Yes.
So you might
true.
As well train them to get what they can get.
It just seems short-sighted to me. I got to say, train them to be the best that they can be, and then they can decide. They can use their looks or they can use their education.
All right, so do you have any young daughters?
No, I don't. I'm childless.
All right, if you did, if your 12 or 13-year-old wanted to go out dressed in fishnet stockings and...
Hell no.
You would say no?
Hell no.
Why?
Hell no. She can do that when she's 18, when she knows the ramifications of it. No,
well,
I don't
well, dear, I could tell you don't have kids because they're doing it way below 18 as it is.
I know, and it freaks me out. It freaks me out, and I was probably doing the same thing when I was that age, but I was sneaking around doing it, you know, because my parents taught me otherwise. The difference is that now...
But you did it anyway, right?
I know the difference.
But you did it anyway.
I did it, but that wasn't my training. So at my age...
Well, it doesn't really matter. You did it
anyway.
But you did it anyway.
Yeah, but my parents, you know, it was all about education and being bright. And I am a good-looking girl, but it was all about being bright. So I could go out and have my kicks and be a little slutty, but I always knew who I was, and I knew what I could get by my intelligence or my looks. I didn't just have to fall back on one.
Yeah, and you know what, though? If you're really hot, you're wasting your time.
A girl's got to make money.
Yeah, well, guess what? There's a lot of guys willing to hand it over to you.
I know. That was my ex-husband. It wasn't worth it. It just wasn't worth it.
But you got the money, and you didn't turn it down, did you? You didn't say, oh, this would be wrong to take money just because I'm hot.
You know, no, you're right. No, I didn't. And I wish later on, I wish now that I hadn't done what I did. Now it's so much better earning your own money. It's so much better not having to rely on anybody. You know, it's the only way to go. And if I had a daughter, that'd be the only way that I would raise her.
Mm. All right, Andrea, thank you for the call.
Thanks, Tom. Good talking.
You know, let me tell you about hot chicks. Hey, good morning. How are you, Pat? We're almost done with the show.
Hi,
good morning,
sorry
Pat.
I'm so late.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. We're just, you didn't like politics anyway, so we're discussing politics. I did get a flashback of my show 10 years ago, how I sounded 10 years ago, and the guest 10 years ago. It was wow. It was something. It was. I don't know if you were on 10 years ago. I don't know if you knew Kelly. Did you know Kelly, my original executive producer, Kelly? Or were you just,
I don't
did you just
think so.
Okay.
I think I showed up around 2015.
Oh, okay. I mean, I had a great group. I mean, the greatest group that I had as a morning crew, of course, is Laverne. She's number one. But guy was Lenore. It was Pastor Joe. It was even Joe. I mean, I had a great morning crew. Had a great morning crew. Back then, I heard my morning crew. I heard my executive producer. It was just a... Of course, and Mr. Solution, he behaved himself back then. He was good. He was good back then. I think he was, I don't know if he came in 10 years ago. I think Mr. Solution came in maybe 7 years ago. He claims he was in the beginning. He might have been. I remember when Mr. Solution first called in. I remember when he first called in. We were talking about relationships. And... he didn't have the hardcore idealistic relationship as he is now. He was a little bit more normal. And when he called in, he had a date that day. I remember it well. He was on a show. We were talking about relationship, and he goes, I got to go, Brian. I go, where are you going? And he says, I have a date. I go, you have a date, you know? And I go, okay. I didn't know him that well. I go, where are you going? He goes, I'm going to meet her at a coffee shop. Okay. I remember that. I go, are you going to spend any money on her? He goes, hell no. She'll pay for her own coffee. I go, this is going to go well. This is going to go real well. Come on in tomorrow. Let me know how the date went. and he called in the next day. And how did the day go? She was a bitch. business solution. That's the first time he called in the show. I wonder if I still have that. And then we did a lot of things. We did a lot of crazy things. Pat. So, Pat, I want to talk to you. I got 30 minutes to kill now because I did all my subject matters, and anybody's listening to the show and said, okay, he's done. I am. I'm done with the political bullshit. Now I'm back to other shit. Other shit. Shit happens in this world. I was going to say something to you, Pat, because there was something going on again. Pat, you know, she's not listening, so I can say this to you, okay? I recommended you to someone, okay? I recommended you, your services.
Okay, thank you.
So, and I'll just tell you a little bit about her, and we'll go from there. She's not listening. So apparently she had a friend who recently passed away, like two or three days ago.
Oh, no.
Apparently they were best friends at a time, and they were just best friends. I think he wanted more, but she later married somebody else, went on with her life. She did not hear from him in 15 years. She didn't get that he wanted more. She thought he was just a good friend, and they hung out together, they're buddies. I'd explain to her, if you're good-looking, men don't hang out with girls. Only ugly men or gay men will hang out. Girls want to be friends with girls. And ugly men will do it because ugly men is waiting to catch you. You know, like you think women are so comfortable when they undress in front of them. And it's like a gay dude. It's like your gay friend. You can tell them anything. All about their sexual exploits and about what they want to do and the dildo, the size dildo that they bought yesterday and the vibrator that doesn't tickle their clit fast enough. You know, all the secrets of a woman. Or their first kiss with a woman in college and how they liked it, but they can't because they're Christians and they're going to go to hell. Since they're going to go to hell, they're going to be a devil's whore anyway. You know, the secrets. So anyway, Pat, the guy passed away. She feels that he's haunting her. Okay?
Why?
Well, there was a song that he dedicated to her like 15 years ago or whatever, you know? And she's hearing that song. The song's on the radio, probably played 6 or 7 times. The song is going over, and they're looping that song in the radio. She goes, I haven't heard that song in years. But that was one of his favorite songs that he dedicated to her. And there's other things, like her phone was acting up, that it would be text messages that she did not text. You know, like a butt dial, but it would be like a butt text. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That she did not text. And then she would look at it and say, it's a draft. I did not put it in a draft. You get the idea. So
yeah.
She feels like she's being, she feels like she's being haunted, Pat. This is a haunting.
Oh, my.
So, so I said, okay, relax. A friend of hers said, you know what you should do is write a letter. You know what I'm saying? This is what I know about the afterlife. You know what I mean? This is what I know. I interviewed a lot of ghost hunters that have been on the show. I interviewed a lot of psychics. I even interviewed dead people. They were great. Then they flew away. But what I've learned is when they don't go into the light, I got a hand up in 111. 111, you're live on the air with Brian Hammer Jackson. Your hand is up. You hit number one. You must want to talk. Hello.
Yeah, I do want to talk, and I want to apologize, first of all, though, Brian.
You do? Why?
Yeah, I need to apologize because you're missing out on my wise counsel, particularly in regard to this delicate subject matter of Israel. And, I mean, I know a few significant historical incidents other than the Arab-Israeli conflict that have more misunderstanding based on historical fact and what actually occurred than this one. I swear to God, it's all about your emotions, no matter what side of the issue you're on,
right.
Not about what
right.
actually happened historically and how the state of Israel came into being. And this whole blow-up with David Chappelle is a clear
right.
indication of that. It's not about the historical
yeah.
fact. It's about emotion. It's not about Israel
right.
came into being. In fact,
right.
Israel, unlike most countries that came into being, did not come
right.
into being initially as a result
mm-hmm.
of conquest. Even though
mm-hmm.
ultimately, I mean, at its root it did when the British defeated the Ottoman Empire in 1917. That's what it all
right.
started. I mean, the
okay.
current events all started
mm-hmm.
105 years ago. But everything else is a distortion on both sides of the issue, but definitely on the so-called pro-Palestinian side of the issue. I mean, they just completely make up and ignore aspects of history. It's just an utter shame. If the Israelis
yeah.
are guilty of anything, it's the fact they may have applied the notion of their national security interests too strictly with regard to the Palestinians, because after all, they are under siege by all of the Arab neighbors, with maybe the exception
mm-hmm.
of Egypt, who want to exterminate
right.
them and drive them into the sea. So at least it's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But,
right.
but in every other regard, there's just no truth about much of it. Look at this idiot Tlaib. Look what she just did. And she hasn't apologized. She hasn't even said, well, I'm awaiting further information, and I might be willing to reconsider my privacy. No, because she's a demagogue, like they all are.
Mm.
It's a disgrace.
Well, I mean, I agree with you that we got to go back from the beginning. How did the Israelis occupy the Palestinian land? When did that happen?
Okay. Let me tell you what the problem with much of this is, understanding historically
yeah.
what occurred. People today want to analogize it to two very emotive historical situations. One, apartheid
mm-hmm.
in South Africa. They invoked
right.
that. And number two, what happened to the American Aboriginal people when the Europeans settled the North American continent. They want to act like
right.
the Palestinians, the Cherokees on the Trail of Fear. Neither one of them is true. Neither is true. It's a complete and utter distortion. It's almost juvenile, stupid myth-making. And it bugs the hell out of me as a pretty good amateur historian.
Well, it's no secret after World War II, the Russians did not want the Jewish to come into their country. The United States didn't want the Jews to come into their country.
Wait a minute. Stop right there, Brian. I know it's your show, and I really apologize for saying what I said, but see, that's not true. The Jewish presence in Palestine goes back 3,700 years. 3,700 years. The Ottoman Empire in the 17th century listed the Jewish population of the Ottoman Empire as over 10%. Now you say, well, 10% isn't a majority. Of course it isn't. Well, neither is 12% of black Americans in the United States, and we're considered a significant minority, are we not? So for people to say that the Jews just came in there from Europe completely and took over the land is just not true. The Jewish presence was continuous for at least 3,700 years throughout the Levant, and it was Levant before it became Palestine. It did become Palestine as an idea of an ethnic people until after World War II. The Arabs of the region consistently said Palestine didn't exist. For instance, in the first Congress of Muslim Christian Association met in Jerusalem in February 19th to choose Palestinian representatives for the Paris Peace Conference. This is what they said in their resolution, Brian. We consider Palestine as part of Arab Syria, as it has never been separated from it at any time. We are connected with it by national, religious, linguistic, natural, economic, and geographical bounds. And throughout that time, before the War
right.
of Independence, all the Arab leaders were saying, Palestine has never, ever, in the history of recorded mankind, ever been a nation, ever, not one microsecond, ever, ever. And they all said the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just
well,
amazing what people ignore about that. I'm talking about Arab leaders in their public pronouncements.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's
it
all in.
Yeah.
Listen to this. Listen to this. Now, there was a commission, a King Crane Commission, which was during the British Mandatory period, when the British assumed mandatory control of the Levant after the conquest of the Ottoman Empire. And there was a commission called the King Crane Commission, and it found that Christian and Muslim Arabs opposed any plan to create a country called Palestine, because they viewed it as a recognition of the Zionist claims to the land. In 1937, it was a local Arab leader named Ani Bey Abdul Hadi, and he told the Peel Commission was another commission that was looking at whether or not to grant the two-state solution at the time that was being proffered, which ultimately suggested the petition of Palestine. That's what it ultimately did. This is a quote from this leader. There is no such country as Palestine. Palestine is a term the Zionists invented. There is no Palestine in the Bible. Our country was centuries part of Syria. You get that over and over again.
I believe you, but it was in 1917 when the British government endorsed the idea of the Jewish homeland in Palestine.
Yeah, the Balfour Declaration, exactly.
I was going right to it, the Balfour Declaration of 1917.
And then they turned it over to the League of Nations to mandate it.
Exactly.
And there was a vote on it by the League of Nations, and most of the nations of the League of Nations time. And I know the League of Nations was crap and didn't have any authority and nobody paid any attention to it. But nonetheless, the League of Nations, 52 of the governments in the League of Nations formalized the British mandate to include acceptance of the Balfour Declaration. And that was in 1922.
The thing about it is, Mr. I didn't catch your name, Sarge. Mr. Sarge. By the way, it's good to hear your voice, Sarge. Good to hear your voice. The conflict is this. I mean, we can go back and forth. We can kill thousands of Palestinians. We can kill thousands of Jews. Even if we wiped out Hamas, not hummus, as the food is called. It's great with duck. Hamas, don't get it confused. Even if we wipe out Hamas, we're still going to have a problem. The problem is, I think it's time for we can have that the Palestinians have their own state and their own state of government. It's time to whatever. This has nothing to do with what happened with Hamas, because I could separate them for the Palestinian people. Just like I could separate the Klan from white people, so on and so forth, you know. So that's what we have to talk about. They need to have their own government.
We really need to talk about that, Brian, because in 2003, Ehud Barak offered Yasser Arafat complete control of Gaza. And 97% control of the West Bank and 97% of Gaza. 97% of thing they wanted, they were going to get in 2003. By now, we'd be celebrating at least 30 years, 20 years or more, because they all, in the past, they turned out officers in 1997 and everything else for almost complete autonomy. They just couldn't get everything they wanted, which would be eliminating from their charter and their public statements and everything else a desire to destroy Israel and a recognition of Israel as a sovereign state that existed, not that it has a right to exist, but exists. That's all they wanted. And the PLO and Yasser Arafat repeatedly turned it down. So don't give me the stuff about, you know, they want to stay. Yeah, I know they want to stay. That's not the main reason they're there. Why is it none of their Arab brother states want to absorb them into their countries, as most of Europe did for the 6 million ethnic German refugees that were clogging the roads of Europe after they were displaced during World War II. They were all absorbed into countries in Europe. All of them. They weren't left there to be some festering boil in the middle of Western Europe. No, they were absorbed by the European countries. Why didn't that happen in the Middle East? I'll tell you why. Because nobody wants them.
I figured you would.
And they want them to be there to be, like I said, a festering boil against Israel and, by extension, the West. That's the reason none of them will take them. They consider them troublesome and politically useful just where they are. Look what happened in 1970 when King Hussein of Jordan offered the PLO refuge after the Six-Day War. Welcome, my Arab brothers. Coming to my country, we'll give you refuge. Well, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
They decided they didn't like King Hussein and his Hashemite kingdom, and they decided they want to overthrow it. King Hussein had to kill almost 4,000 of them, 4,000 of them in the war, civil war they launched that they caused, mm-hmm. and he had to drive them out of Jordan. The same thing happened when he went to Lebanon in 1973.
Right.
Nobody wants the Palestinians, not even the other Arab nations. Why? Why don't anybody ask themselves why?
Because they're like nomads. They don't have an allegiance to anyone. They're not loyal to anyone. And they
listen to me, Brian. Let me tell you, Brian.
Yes.
All of them are descended of people that either people who were at one time citizens of Syria, Jordan, Lebanon,
right.
or Egypt.
Right.
Almost all of them.
Exactly. Right.
Or they are descended from people at one time
right.
were citizens
of
those countries. So then why don't they want them back?
Right. Would it be fair that they consider them gypsies, nomads?
They consider them like that, yeah. They don't want them.
Yeah.
Nobody wants them.
Yeah.
And now
now
Israelis are told they're supposed to make peace with the people who voted Hamas into existence as the governance of their country. They elected Hamas to govern the West Bank and Gaza. In their charter, they explicitly say their objective is the destruction of Israel.
Right.
Now, would you mind telling me what nation that doesn't have a suicide wish is supposed to make a pact with people like that?
Well, I mean, you're kind of biased. I mean, to label them as bothersome people, and I know they were.
I didn't
right.
have
they
the
Arabs
do.
I
apparently.
I know. But we felt the same thing with the Israelis. I mean, it's the same thing how we felt, how the Russians felt towards the Israelis.
Look. I understand
Israel.
The historical realities of why Israel exists in the first place. Because the Zionists came,
right.
there were three what they call aliyahs. The Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
The first one occurred
right.
in probably about 1880.
Sure.
And the second one occurred just before the First World War in the early 1910s, 1915 or so. And then the third one occurred after World War II. So you had three aliyahs, and they came there. Why? Because the Jews were being pogromed. They were being annihilated. They were being butchered. They were being killed. And Zionists thought, okay, we'll come to the Middle East, we'll start buying large tracts of Arab land there. Yes, that's
mm-hmm.
how they got that land. They bought it at exorbitant prices. For instance, semi-arid, unproductive land, which they initially bought, for someone in the neighborhood of an average price, depending on where they would buy it, but $1,100 an acre. By contrast, prime agricultural land in the state of Iowa was going for $110 an acre at the same time. The Arabs were charging exorbitant prices. They were purchasing the land, turning them into kibbutzim
right.
and settlements. That's how
right.
they got
You're
it.
Absolutely.
They didn't drive
yeah.
them off the land. They didn't conquer them.
Right.
That's how they got it.
Well,
and then the mandatory period gave them the opportunity to say, look, we want to coalesce these settlements we already have. And we want to use that as the basis for our new Israeli state. Now, when they wrote their Declaration of Independence or their Declaration, of Independence,
mm-hmm.
they put in the public. They announced it on the radio. You could see the leader saying at the time, "Our Arab brothers, do not leave our country. If you wish to stay here, live with us in peace and build our nation, we want you to stay." But the Arab leaders
right.
told them this. And again,
mm-hmm.
this is all in the public pronouncements of the time.
Sure.
You Arabs get out of the way of our advancing armies. You will interfere with our destruction of the Jewish state. When we drive these Jews into the sea, you can come back and take their shit. And that's why they left. The Israelis didn't drive them out.
Verbatim, that's what they said verbatim. When you come back.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty good paraphrasing of it. I mean, would you please look at the I could give you quotes. I'll give you the exact quotes of what they said. I'm trying to save time here.
No, I understand. I hear what you're saying. You know what? It's a political clusterfuck. It never
works. It's not political. It's also cultural. People hate Jews.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely
Jews.
Right. You're absolutely
Jesus,
right.
Let's just be honest
why
about
do
it.
People
look, here's the thing, Brian. I want you to understand this first and foremost. I'm a citizen of the United States. I'm a natural born citizen of the United States. My first and foremost allegiance is to my country.
I'm from another planet, and I observe you.
Okay.
I just encourage you to
And look,
but go ahead.
If the legitimate national security interests of the United States do not coincide with those of Israel, as far as I'm concerned, our interests should predominate first. I'm not necessarily for Israel, and I'm damn sure not for these Arab terrorists. I'm definitely not for them.
Right.
But I tell you, I tell you one thing. Look, any sovereign nation, I don't care. You know how much I despise Red China and the Chinese Communist
right.
Party. You know how much I do.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were attacked in a manner similar to this, every sovereign nation has the obligation to respond in a manner similar to what the Israelis are doing. You cannot tolerate this kind of a thing and call yourself a sovereign nation.
I know. But I don't think they call themselves. Do they call themselves a sovereign nation? I'm not quite
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
Israel
is a sovereign. That's
do
what
they?
It's all about.
Ow.
Of course they do.
For those, I'm
talking about the Israelis. I'm talking about Palestine has never been a sovereign nation.
Look, yes.
Brian, tell me something. Would the United States be a sovereign nation today if after the Declaration of Independence we hadn't decided to take up arms to ensure that the United
True.
States would remain
a
sovereign nation?
I do agree. Yes, I do agree.
Okay, that's what it's all about. And the bottom line, that's what it's all about. That's the bottom line of everything.
Okay.
Can you defend what you've got? That's why every country in the world has an army. That's why.
True. Except Poland. They can't march right and kill each other. It's just a Polish joke. But you're right.
I know.
Sarge.
Yeah.
We have, I forgot to tell you, we have the great Pat here in the studio. She says hello to you, Pat Oberlin.
Hello, Pat. How you doing? I'm sorry I'm getting so agitated, but this is serious.
If people
want to hate Israel, okay,
yeah.
I'm not here to tell you who to hate or who to love. That's not my place.
Right.
I ain't interested in it. You're going to do what you're going to do until maybe you come to an epiphany. Be my guest. I'm not here to tell you to be for the Israelis or anything else. I have no intention of doing that. I'm not the arbiter of who to love and hate. But I tell you, if you're going to hate the Israelis, would you please do it on the basis of sound historical understanding? That's all I ask.
You know, I never.
Yeah, then you hate them anyway, then hate them.
I know. I never understand why people don't like the Jews. I mean, they're the chosen ones. If anything, we should celebrate a Jew. You know, we should have a Jew on top of our Christmas tree to bless us.
I can understand it to some extent. I mean, a lot of it has to do with envy and resentment and the fact they are a minority. And in many places where they are allowed to insinuate themselves unhindered, they tend to do very, very well because they value education so highly.
Yes, and look
at the resentment we got here in the United States. Listen to me, all of wokeism, all of it,
it's Maoism
with an American twist. It's about envy, resentment, and class warfare hatreds.
I don't know. I don't know what the envy is.
Oh, I know it is.
You know,
down my mind it is.
They make money. You know, one thing I got to give the Jewish people is they keep that money into their own community. They don't share that money. When the Jewish
you're repeating
community.
More reasons why people just arbitrarily want to kill a Jew. Now let me tell you something, man. It's like in Germany. Jews, more than any country on the continent of Europe, Jews were insinuated thoroughly into the middle class, the academic classes, the legal classes, the business classes, more so than any other country in Europe. To say nothing of the fact that they, you know, and they were about as assimilated as any population group could be until, of course, the fall of the Weimar Republic and the rise of Adolf Hitler. You would never have thought, I mean, you said of all the countries in Europe where the Jews are most likely to be annihilated by policy, you would think Russia or Poland. That would be the most likely place for that. But it didn't. It happened in the country where they were most thoroughly assimilated because they were so successful as a group of people, and they were a relatively small ethnic part of the population. And the rest of the population said, how come we're not as successful as these people unless, of course, they've got some kind of secret inside leg up?
A cabal? You think it's a secret spot of the Jewish people?
Oh. And by the way, and many Jews, and let's face it, this is also true, many Jews, like Karl Marx, created communism. Many Jews were involved in the upper strata of banking that didn't accrue necessarily to the benefit of other people. So it was easy to hang this label on them. Because if you look at the truth, and you can see some very beautiful figures in world history have been Jews. The problem is they've always been a minority and a successful one at that. And it was easy to tag on the most evil characters who happened to be Jews, and you're able to tag it on to the group as a whole.
Well, they'd make a mean brisket.
And like I said, Karl Marx, in my mind, was the most evil Jew who ever lived. With a damn communism of his.
No wonder I have no audience. Them evil Jews. Why don't I have a show called
an evil Jew. I didn't say he was evil because he was a Jew. In fact, he hated being a Jew. He was a self-hating Jew. He regularly spoke about how bad. Karl Marx was a psychopath, man. You ought to have a show about what a crazy fool that guy was. He was neurotic. He was a basket case.
Next, I'm Brian Hammer Jackson. So, evil Jews running amok in the cabal.
No, I'm just saying that one. He didn't like black people. He didn't like Jews. He didn't like most people. That's why he came up with the most anti-human philosophy that ever has been, Marxism.
True. And so we have Pat's been here, and, you know, she's been asking about you, Sarge. She says, you know, I haven't heard Sarge in a while. I miss Sarge. I go, I don't know where Sarge is. I guess he left us I guess he went on to another show.
I had an expedition that I had to attend, and it was quite an adventure, and I'll have to let you in on it. But not so that'll be a tale for another day. Brian, do you realize that when the Israelis settled in the Palestinian area, the areas they settled in were arid marshlands at best. They were not productive. They weren't growing any crops on them. There are not many Arabs live there. And, nobody lived, hardly anybody lived there. If you read the descriptions of the time, you'd be just amazed to think what they accomplished. When they started to make the desert bloom, you know what happened? The Arabs flocked there because of the better living conditions. Because the infant mortality rate went down. Because the life expectancy went up. All because of the efforts of the Zionists. And that's why they started coming into that region. I mean, that is the reason that they were attracted by the efforts of the Israelis. Listen to this report from the Palestinian Royal Commission in 1913. The road leading from Gaza to the north was only a summer track suitable for transport by camels and carts. No orange groves, orchards, or vineyards would be seen until one reached the Jewish village of Yabne. Houses were all of mud. No windows were anywhere to be seen. The plows were made of wood. The yields were very poor. The sanitary conditions of the villages were horrible. Schools did not exist. The western part toward the sea was almost a desert. The villages in this area were few and thinly populated. Many ruins of villages were scattered over the area, as owing to the prevalence of malaria, many villages were deserted by their inhabitants. And David Dawood Barakat, who edited the Egyptian paper El Abram, wrote this, quote, "It is absolutely necessary that an entente be made between the Zionists and Arabs because the war of words can only do evil. The Zionists are necessary for the country. The money which they will bring, their knowledge and intelligence, and the industriousness which characterizes them will contribute without doubt to the regeneration of the country." He wrote that in 1915.
Mm-hmm.
And you get all kinds of things like that from Arab leaders and talk about the poor condition of the land and what the Zionists did when they came there and literally made the desert bloom. They literally made the desert bloom.
Right. Well, we do have a conflict now, and we know that people are itching to get into this war. We know that Lebanon now wants to put their feet into it, Syria, Iran, and they know something we do know. We just got out of Afghanistan, and they know that was a clusterfuck. We couldn't wait to get out of Afghanistan. I mean, we left some of our people in Afghanistan. We couldn't get out.
No, it was a damn fool, idiot of a president who botched it like that. It didn't have to go down like that. It wouldn't have gone down like that if Trump had been president.
Okay.
You know it.
Okay.
Stop acting like it was just a serendipitous act of fate, and it couldn't have been avoided.
Okay.
Please.
Okay.
You know better.
What I'm trying to say is that they know that we don't want to get back in the Middle East. They know this. Lebanon knows that. Hezbollah knows this. And when we warn Iran, stay out of this, we warn Lebanon, keep your mouth shut. We warn Hezbollah, or I'm mispronouncing it, you know what I'm saying. We warn them, saying, shut the fuck up. They're looking at us saying, are you serious, man? You don't want to come back to the Middle East. You don't want this shit. And they know it. They're pulling our bluff because they know. And then Israel says, well, we're going to blow you away. Israel gave another warning to Lebanon to stay out of this, or we have enough capabilities to blow you away. And it's like, whoa, slow your roll.
Look, Brian, I understand that. Look, we hadn't botched the withdrawal in Afghanistan so horribly. We would be in much better standing to negotiate this thing today, but it wasn't. Because the American people allowed corruptocrat to steal the election. You and I, we all know it.
No, I don't know. Stop it.
Yes, you
do. I do not know.
You don't have to admit it.
I
know you know.
I
know you know.
I do not endorse this conversation. I do not.
I know you know. But
my
president
is a red, white, and blue, Mr. Joe Biden.
Here's another thing, Brian. Is it not true that most countries, with some exceptions, like maybe initially Pakistan, were formed by conquest? If somebody comes in, a coalition of countries, a relatively small number of countries, come in, conquer somebody, and create a new nation, right? Yeah. Well, think about it. The state of Israel
created. That's how most countries are formed. Even we did that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That includes the United States. United States got here through victory in warfare and or conquest, okay?
The state of
Israel came into being as a result of two international mandates. One, the League of Nations, and then after World War II, a vote by the international community of the United Nations. All right?
I think Pat is making a spell.
Another thing that's unusual about it. It didn't come about because somebody went in, like the Zulus did, and conquered the Matabele. You know what I mean? It didn't happen that way. You didn't have a conquistador come in and drive out the Mayas and the Aztecs. It didn't happen that way.
Didn't pay no rent.
What happened was the international community said, okay, there's a problem here with all these refugees. And a lot of them have settled in this particular region of the world. The British don't want anything to do with it anymore. It's a headache for them.
Right.
That's why they turned it over to us to decide. And so Israel came into being not through conquest, but through international agreement and a vote.
And mandate. I understand. I understand. I do understand that.
Stop pretending that it's the Palestinians on the Trail of Tears. But it didn't happen that way.
There is a Trail of Tears. There is a Trail of Tears.
Well, there's human suffering. Did a lot of Palestinians suffer? Yes. Thousands of them suffered because of the
arrogance of their leaders. Right. Sarge, I don't know if it was the right PR move to turn off the electricity, to cut them off from food, to cut them off from water. I don't know if that was the right PR move to do it because you're going
It wasn't a PR move, Brian.
I was just joking. I was exaggerating. You know what I'm saying.
It was a military move. They're serious. They're fighting a war.
I know, but I don't know if that was the right move for the Americans to endorse that shit, too, when we're up there hugging.
I'm not going to endorse it. I'm not going to endorse that any more than I'm going to endorse the firebombing of Dresden or Hamburg or Tokyo.
Right.
By the way, there were 650,000 German civilians died in World War II in the aerial bombings alone. And Japan had about 665,000 in all of those aerial bombings in World War II.
Well, we kind of dropped the bomb.
So I'm not going to endorse it, Brian, but it happened.
Yeah.
That's why you're supposed to avoid a war in the first place.
We can't avoid human nature. Have you ever been married? You can't avoid war. Human beings always have to have conflict in their lives. That's how we survive. We have to conquer. We have to have conflict. We have to have some kind of thing that we could challenge ourselves to. Or hi, puppy. See, now you got your dog mad at me. Your dog's barking.
He's mad at you.
He's a Republican.
He's a blockhead, Loki.
Where's my gun? I'm going to shoot him.
Loki, shut up. Hey, quiet. Come here.
No, he's a
Come
good
here.
Puppy. No.
That's enough
no,
criticism
of
him.
Don't be mean to the puppy. Don't be mean to the puppy. Good puppy.
He
sounds like
a
big a dog.
Boy.
Is that a Sherman Shepherd?
He's kind of a mutt, but he's very smart. He's very smart. I mean, he's sharp as a tack. We have conversations. I ask him when he comes to me, he looks for something. He wants something to put his shit on my leg, and he'll just look at me soulfully and whimper. And I ask him, what do you want? And he goes out and gets whatever he wants. He wants to get rope. He wants to fight with the tug of war. Or he gets a ball that we toss around and play with. Or he wants to go outside.
Yeah.
He goes. He knows what do you want means. He can show me what he wants.
I know. My dog owned me, and I loved it, man. I mean, you don't get that undying love, that unconditional love from no one other than a puppy. Cats can't give it to you. Cats cannot give you that unconditional love. They won't. In fact, there's a lot of cat owners, I dare you, they beg the cat to love them, and the cat says, no, I don't want you. I'm just going to shit over here in this little box.
No, that's not true.
Brian, you
want to
know what one of the most poignant things for me in this whole Israeli thing was? It was that video clip of that black Israeli dog who confronted the terrorists coming into his yard. And like a good boy, he went to apparently try to chase these people away. He sensed they were dangerous and they didn't belong there, and he came, started coming towards
them.
The terrorists shot this dog with one round. This dog did not stop. He kept coming toward him, trying to get to him.
Yeah.
Shot him again. The dog still didn't stop. He didn't try to run away. He still kept advancing toward the terrorist. The third shot killed his dog. For me, that was one of the most poignant things about this whole thing, watching this noble, heroic dog trying to protect his family and his home.
True. Now, Pat will do that, too. She has spells and stuff that she can conjure up that if you mess with her family, you will grow a tail at nighttime. I'm telling you, and speaking of that, Pat... Because Pat hasn't said anything. Mr. Sard, can you do me a favor? Because Pat's been patient, and she came in late and everything. Can she just give you a tarot card reading? Can she do that for me?
Oh, no, not him.
Not Sard?
Wow. He doesn't want one.
Wait a minute, you can't do it to me, or you won't?
I can. You just never
You just insulted Sard.
Wait a minute, I never said I didn't want one.
You
must have been listening to Brian or something.
Oh, my God. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put you two in private so you can talk to yourself. I'm going to take a little break, a two-minute break, so you can get it together. So I'll bring you back on the air if you guys want to give a reading. Is that cool? So you two are going to go in private right now and talk to each other. Hold on. This song goes out to Laverne Verney in Virginia. Here you go, Laverne. And I'm going to put you two, and I'll put all three of us in private. Here we go. Let me see. One.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile from your cheeks? Darling, I will be loving you till it's 70. Baby, my heart could still pull that heart at 23. I'm thinking about how people fall in love in mysterious ways. Maybe
touch of a hand. Well, me, I fall in love with you every single day, and I just wanna tell you I am. So honey, now take me into your loving arms. Kiss me under the light of a thousand stars. Place your head on my beating heart. I'm thinking out loud, maybe we found love right where we are. When my hair's all but gone and my memory fades, and the crowds don't remember my name, when my hands don't play the strings the same way, I know you will still love me the same. 'Cause honey, your soul could never grow.
Now that we have the two people talking together, we have Sarge and we have Miss Pat Oberlin. Again, Patricia Oberlin's Bakery, home of Devil Food Cake, Patty Cakes. That's right. If you need a little lift, she'll send you to the moon with her gummies and her cakes and her brownies. I'm telling you, take a bite of her brownies and you'll never remember the problem that you have before. Problem free. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm bringing them back into the studio. We have Sarge, one of our favorites, our morning crew, and we have Patricia Oberlin, the world-famous psychic. Ladies and gentlemen, here they are. They're going to get along, and they're going to read each other. There they are. They're in the studio now. Hello, kids. All right. I'm going to let you guys talk.
Hi.
And do the reading.
Okay, I've got the reading out. It starts out with a woman and a lot of happiness around her. There is a victory for you and a good direction, arrows of love. Your intuition is very good, and so is the woman you're with. There has been a little bit of her withdrawing, but it's not anything personal. It's just a state of mind at the moment. There is new opportunities. There's a few sacrifices to make this all work, but the end result is new beginnings and a lot of love. Yeah. This is a very good reading. It's just telling you to be strong because basically everything's going right. Don't wreck it. You there, sir?
Damn, Brian.
Yeah.
She has summed up my situation fairly accurately. The only thing she left out was the distance that's involved because of my current situation with her, but...
It's temporary.
Yeah,
it's very temporary.
Yeah, I'm amazed. She's actually kind of summed up a situation I'm pleasantly involved in. Very good, Pat.
Now, Sarge, you know I dabble, and I've been listening to Pat for a long, long time. A lot of it rubbed off on me. I like to read you, but this is your love life, if you would so desire. I like to read what's happening to you in the boudoir.
Like I said, there's a distance involved with my paramour, and I have been somewhat absent. I've been somewhat negligent, missing in that regard. Ain't no boudoir going on because of the distance involved, and my thing and my junk ain't that long.
What's going on? Are you afraid to make commitment? It sounds like you're afraid to make commitment.
No. She had something very important she had to take care of, and she had to go like a couple thousand miles away. So,
Oh, okay.
And, hey, that's it. But, yeah, but
Brian,
other than that,
looking for problems where there isn't one.
Pat summed it up kind of succinctly, yeah.
She did? Well, give me a shot. One card. Okay, I'm going to pick one card for just one card. And this is you and your love life, and I happen to pick the card called The Fool. I did. I swear. It was just a random card.
Like attracts like.
Well, Pat, please tell us about the card The Fool. I actually did.
Yeah, irrational events happening. It can mean surprises coming up. It can also mean you're not thinking too clearly, but in this case, it's surprises. So
that could apply to this situation for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, it's more surprising than anything.
Am I really vibing that much through the telephone line?
Yep. It's okay.
Well, very interesting. Interesting. Is there a prognosis that perhaps
I'll give you your prog. Here's your prog. The Fool reminds you not to take sex so seriously. Don't take sex so seriously, Sarge. I mean, make a joke sometimes when you're down there eating on a muffin. Like, knock,
where
knock.
Where did you find that one?
I found it. Sometimes it's important to let go and have fun without worrying about the outcome or the consequences. Embrace your inner child. I do. In fact, I am my own inner child. And explore your sexual desires. I have explored it. I made Pat dress up as a little girl and say, hello, Daddy, but she would not do it. I moved on. The Fool encouraged you to take risks and try new things in the bedroom. Now, you, Sarge, try new things. Maybe you should role play. Maybe you should be a Democrat and you should be a Republican. See how that works out. No, it won't work out.
I don't know how
don't
to do
afraid.
That. I don't have that much imagination.
Don't be afraid to be adventurous and explore your sexual boundaries. Remember to communicate openly, honestly, your partner to ensure that both of your needs are being met. The Fool reminds you that sexual pleasure can be found in unexpected places. Anal, maybe. I don't think so. And situations.
You're reading
so keep
the
on
sex
op-
meanings again.
So keep on with your open mind and be open to new experiences. You might try gay sex. Maybe
okay.
not.
Okay, I knew
the
sodomite.
Sodomy,
mind is a
sodomy. What you're reading? But we do have somebody in the studio. That wants to be read, and I need her to be read. Mystery guest, please talk to. And we can get right back to Sarge. Mystery guest, please talk to Pat so you can be read. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Hi, Pat.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
It's Ellen.
I know.
Hi, Ellen. How you doing?
Hey, Sarge.
That's Sarge.
I'm doing good.
She needs
so
to be read because
reading,
she,
Ellen.
Yeah, because she has been
would
possessed and she feels evil spirits are entering her body, and she is she feels not in the right place. So please read her, and then she can go because she got things to do. She's too busy to be on this show. Okay, thank you.
Oh, be quiet,
back.
Brian, before I kick your ass.
All right. See, she's angry. I will be quiet now.
Yes, please do.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, he is. Well, Ellen, I need you to talk a bit.
Okay, what do you need me to talk about? It's hot here
weather.
In Louisiana. It's hot here in Louisiana. It doesn't even feel
how
like
hot?
Fall. Like,
oh, really?
Okay, not as hot as it was over the summer, but it's in the 80s, and the humidity is a little high. So
I wish
it would cool down. I wish it would cool down so it would start feeling like fall. Because next week is Halloween. Kids are not supposed to trick-or-treat in the heat.
No, we always have snow and rain. It's only 55 here.
Yeah, you're bragging. I wish it was 55 here. Shit, we had a few days of cool weather, but not, you know, it didn't stay long. I wish it would come back.
Yeah, I can understand that. I get kind of sick of the air conditioning after a while.
Yeah, I mean, you're not supposed to have your air conditioning on in the wintertime.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I've got your reading here.
Okay, cool.
It starts out with you're a little worried about money at the moment, but most of that is imagination. Things are going to change very quickly.
Oh, cool.
So
I needed to hear that.
Don't worry about it. It's really going to change fast. There is success coming for you. There seems to be a man there. It's a very good situation.
Oh, cool.
He might be from your past, but it says love anyhow.
Okay.
You're undecided and worried about this event, but you're above the problem no matter what. Like, don't worry about it. You don't need to worry.
Okay.
Cool. There's a bit of mental anguish, and that goes with the money, but like I said, don't worry about it. It's going to be gone in a matter of weeks, the problem. And you're going to hear some very good news. But major changes are going to happen, major changes. Just don't worry.
Okay. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was the reading. So you do have love around you. You do have money coming.
Wow. Well, I happen before she may, if she's
okay.
Like Sarge.
Hold on, Brian. It's not because anybody dies or anything, is it, Pat?
Oh, my God. Why would you say that?
No, I don't know. I don't want it to be like that. I don't want the money to be like that.
Well, what happened if it was my death? You'd let it rain.
I didn't see any upsets.
There's no death.
Like that one.
No.
Oh, okay.
You're
going to
make money
because
I'm around because of the event. Now, Ellen, before you leave, as I did with Sarge, I have your love card here. Down as you go. This is about your love life. Now, here we go. As I pulled up the chariot, and Pat would tell you what the chariot's about. This is your love card. What is the chariot about, Pat?
That's success. That's total success. And she got that in the reading I did.
Wow. Well, I pulled that up. And Pat is right. You're worried about money. It's your imagination. It's just your imagination. So in reality, when they evict you from your broke-ass house because you can't pay your broke-ass bill and you live in a box, remember, you shouldn't have worried about money in the first place. It was just your imagination.
Yeah, okay.
So,
yeah, it's my imagination that my box is
just
falling
imagination.
Apart and the rain's coming in.
Exactly. Yeah, don't worry about it at all. When you can't pay
your
water bill,
fine,
the guy, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. When you're in the street with your bucket, you got her 25 cents so I could get some plastic to cover myself from the rain. You're going to be fine. You'll bounce back. And it says here.
I'll go live in the warehouse at Walmart.
Oh, it says here, and here's your reading. As you continue to bask in the energy of the chariot, you find that your sexual drive and your determination are all-time high. The chariot symbolizes the power of focus and the ability to remain unwavering in the face of an obstacle that may come your way. With the chariot by your side, you are unlikely to be distracted from your passion or your goals today. Whether you're seeking a new sexual partner, meow. That's right, kitty. Meow. Exploring new fantasies or simply looking to enhance your current sexual experience. Yes, kitty. That is one loud kitty. Meow.
What's wrong with your cat?
You are determined to reach your ultimate destination. As you speed ahead on your erotic adventure, your energy is likely to attract someone who's just as enthusiastic about exploring your sexuality as you are. They're called perverts and charlatans. Embrace them. The chair reminds you that sexual triumph is within reach, and that means your dildo is probably in your drawer. And with the right mindset and determination, you can achieve anything you set your mind to. Anything you set your mind to. Yes, Kitty. Yes.
That was
there you
all
go.
You could get.
So embrace the excitement of the chair that brings you to allow yourself to fulfill and indulge your deepest desire, whether you're seeking to explore your own body or share an intimate experience with a partner. The chair is a powerful symbol that encourages you to take charge and enjoy the ride. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Remember, your sexual journey is unique to you, and a chair reminds you to trust in your own intuition and follow your passions. So go ahead and try to romance the radio guy. Try to entice the radio guy. It will get you nowhere unless you show some bosoms. Thank you. And that's your reading.
Unless you chose a what?
I don't know. I just read the cards, lady. I just read the cards. I have no idea what it means.
Sure you did.
No. I have no idea.
What's wrong with
your
kitty,
Pat? Huh?
What's wrong with your kitty? Your kitty cat's meowing.
Oh, I thought that was your cat.
No, that's not my cat. My cats are sleeping because they ate.
Mine just likes to make noise, honey.
Sarge, I don't know. I'm kind of disturbed here. I never heard another woman go, what's wrong with your kitty cat? I don't know. What's wrong with your cat? I'm kind of disturbed. I don't know if it's a turn on or is it disturbing. I don't know.
Well, I'm amazed that you waited so long to make this rather degenerate reference. I'm really surprised. I said, I'm waiting for him to seize on a reference to kitty cat. And you let me down, but finally you justified my impression. I appreciate that, Maya.
Hello, kitty. Yes. Well, Sarge, I just want to say thank you for coming in, Ellen. Ellen and I are working on an event. I think she mentioned it. The event is going to move authors forward. What we're going to do is an author kind of Comic-Con kind of thing with people who come in trying to sell their books, but they will dress in the character of their books to sell their books at this event. And then later there's an after party at a haunted house. There's a great after party at the haunted house.
A haunted hotel, Brian.
Yeah, it's a haunted hotel. Okay. It's going to be fun. It's going to be everything. I will be there. Ellen will be there. There'll be special guests there. There'll be hauntings there. There'll be ghosts there. Who knows? There's a ghost that maybe you know that would be there. So anyway, we're going to have fun. We're hoping you support us, and we're hoping you support the
authors. Might I suggest a program for you, Brian?
Sure.
Just a suggestion. You might want to do a program on all the myths about the founding of Israel and the subsequent events leading up to today. There's so much. Yes, there is. And I think that would be very instructive for much of your listenership.
I think so. I will do that. What should I do again? Sarge. We will go over the Palestinian conflict, but the Israeli conflict. We go up to.
I mean, the whole thing. You should concentrate on the last 107 years because that is the origin of all that's going on today. I mean, you can go back 3,700 years, but, you know, things get kind of lost, and there were a lot of shifting things that happened in that period, rise and fall of Judah and Israel and all that other stuff.
We'll go into
Maccabee Revolt and the destruction of the first and second temples and all that. But the genesis of the modern-day problems go back 107 years.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do tomorrow. Remember what we did before? So tomorrow, if you come in, I swear to God, if you name it, if you're going to come in tomorrow, I swear to God, I'll come on.
You're
going to
be on tomorrow, aren't you?
I will make it like your guess. If you come in tomorrow.
What time does the party start?
7:30 a.m., because I consider you a guest. 7:30 a.m. my time. So it'll be 7, 8, 10:30 your time. And I will give you 15 minutes, Sarge, that you can go over that without interruption. Get it and get everything straight. How is that a deal?
Yeah, like I said, just historical record with the documentation and historical record shows. I mean, like I said, once people at least understand that in context, I think they can make their own decisions. They want to, like I said, if they still want to hate Israel after that, well, be my guest.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say, yeah, that's true. 15 minutes tomorrow. Don't forget to get that start. Don't forget to support our event. The reason I'm giving it the start is because on Facebook he sent me a picture of his penis.
What do you think that was, Anthony's wiener?
I love Sarge. Thank you, Sarge, for coming in the show, man. I miss your voice. I really did. Thank you for coming in. It's great to hear you.
Well, it's good to talk to you guys again. It's good to hear Pat pull through okay. I'm really glad to hear that. And Ellen, how's Sean doing?
Good.
Huh?
How's Sean?
No, Ellen doesn't have Sean. That's Melissa.
No, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm sorry. You're right. Excuse me. My mistake.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, how is Sean?
My kids are grown.
Her kids are grown. I don't know how Sean is. I don't know how. There was another one. There was Sean and
Oliver.
Damn, I forgot the other kid. Who
Oliver.
Was it? Oh,
Oliver.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Melissa has not been on. And,
well, Melissa has to come on and give us a report about how Sean is. So I don't know.
Also, you know, they could come on when they like to. The door is already open.
I'm trying to make Sean part of my squad. So, you know.
I know. He smiles when he hears your voice. He smiles when he hears your voice.
Yeah.
You connected with Sean.
There you go.
That's it. I want to thank you guys for coming in. And don't forget to support. If you can be with us in Virginia, I don't know how far – Virginia, I'm sorry, Louisiana. If you're not that far from Louisiana, we'll set you up in a haunted – maybe we'll set you up in a room in one of the haunted hotels. We have some fun. Support the – it's October the 24th, you know, the year of the 24th, so it's not anything recent. You have a year to plan this, right? It's going to be a great event. And I'm busy doing my Tiki Talk for the event. And,
you're working on your TikTok?
I'm working on my Tiki Talk. I shot two videos yesterday for this event. And I'm glad you're in, Ellen. I'm glad you're all in. You get me worried once in a while. You know that, kid?
Well, I'm sorry, you know, but I didn't get home until late last night.
I know. You're not as young as you used to be. I understand.
That has nothing to do with it. It's just that we have big people coming today, and they want everything perfect before we leave.
Oh, I understand.
You can't leave any baskets up front. Everything has to be put back where it goes.
Yeah. I hear you. I'm a big person, too. I'm a celebrity.
Yeah.
Silence goes the room. Love you, Ellen. Thank you, kiddo. Thank you, kiddo, for doing that. I really appreciate we're still on track. I really do. All right, Pat, thank you. And Pat, I will talk to you
about
a friend of mine who's going through a haunting, and maybe I did suggest you. We'll talk later on that. In fact, Pat, you already did. I got your number. Bye, everybody. See you at 7:30. Don't forget, Sarge will be on discussing the basic truth about what's going on with Palestine and Palestinian people and Israeli people. 15 minutes of it without interruption. A pure Sarge.
Well, Brian, I had the thing to do tomorrow. So
I know.
I'm not.
I know, kiddo.
Yeah.
No,
all right.
Listen.
Bye, everybody. We'll have everybody else here, but Ellen will be there in spirit. Bye, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye,
Pat. Bye, Sarge. And bye, Ellen.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile from your cheeks?